What do you say we start the show?
Welcome to This Is Only a Test. This is episode 48, recorded January 12th, 2011. I'm Will Smith. Joining me today, we got the podcast power trio here. I'm going to start right to left and go with Gary Widow, who brought, kindly enough, sugar-free Red Bulls today.
Always happy to do my bit.
You feel like, you sound like you need a Red Bull, Gary.
Don't I, though?
I knew I'd need
some for myself. And
you couldn't bring one for you and not bring for the whole class.
Well, as you see, I brought four. Just in case Anna was joining us as well.
She's still furiously editing video from CES right now. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how recovered are you from your 6 days in Vegas?
I'd give it a 6 at this point.
Okay. With one being the least.
I'm still sleeping late. And even as I sit here, I'm still feeling the fatigue.
You can take a nap.
How about you?
I am as high energy as I ever am.
No, you just said that you were going to.
It's the speed.
That must be what it is.
No, I've been my sleep patterns have been off. I've been falling asleep. Like last night, I looked over, my wife fell asleep on the couch at like 9 o'clock, which is usually the key for me to like bust out the Xbox and play some big boy games.
Yep.
And literally, I climbed the top of one building in Assassin's Creed Brotherhood and was unconscious before I jumped off. Yeah,
because like character fell off the building and you fell asleep.
The next thing I know, I'm woken up and I'm like running into a corner because I'm pushing the controller down a little bit. And she's like, it's time to go to bed. You should go to bed. And I had these dreams full of Italian people.
Oh, dear.
Okay.
Yeah. Norm, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I have ice cream and Red Bull.
What kind of ice cream is that?
Those powers
Did you bring
combined.
It out for everybody? Where's my ice cream?
Ice cream's in the freezer.
I want some ice cream.
So again, notice the difference in philosophies. I bring enough Red Bull for everyone. Norm brings enough ice cream only for himself.
So you guys not having ice cream, but me knowing there is more left.
There's another zero-sum victory for Norm.
But Gary knows that it's a zero-sum goodwill and hope game that he played by filling my afternoon with Red Bull.
That's right.
Yeah. The taurine is coursing through my veins even as we speak.
You know what that is, right?
Bull urine?
Yes.
Yeah. It's the bull. Isn't it from bull semen or something? No. It's like it's something that's secreted in their
anal glands.
Liver or gallbladder or something.
I'm not crazy about that. I just try to pretend that's not a thing.
You know what we should do is we should test that. We should get straight taurine. And I'll drink Red Bull and Norm can drink the stuff straight from the bull's ass. And we'll see what happens.
There's taurine and there's guarine.
Guarana.
I mean, I think all that stuff's fairly natural, but the taurine, the extract from the glands of a bull or whatever it is that's going on there. I kind of feel like the less I know about that, the better.
Oh, that's a horse. Winnie's horse is Winnie.
Yeah, I don't know what noise.
You know,
the
bulls are colorblind.
Goes moo.
Really?
Bulls are not angry at bullfighters because of the red. It's because of the waving.
Oh, they don't like the motion?
The motion.
Hold on. So you mean there could be some hippie bullfighter out there with a tie-dyed cloak and there'd be no difference?
No difference whatsoever.
Unless you dance
like a frilly man, then you will get
No, frilly man, what is that supposed to mean? Mm-hmm. I'm offended on multiple levels. It's anti-Spaniard and something else.
Well,
I'll probably edit this part out of the
Get the racism quotient in early.
Exactly. Casual racism is what tested.com brings to technology. So Norm, you feeling recovered? You're eating that ice cream like a champ. You don't seem to be suffering.
Vegas is a young man's game. I always knew that he was going to be the first to bounce back.
I turned a circle, did with a seventh Jaeger Red Bull. It went all the way around.
Oh, my God.
Jesus Christ.
Vegas is such a weird place. I mean, obviously you're staying up late and being like hyper-stimulated, but it feels like being in another –
hyper-stimulated.
It's like when you come – doesn't it – it takes a long time to get reacclimatized returning from Vegas, don't you think? More so than other places.
Well, I found driving through the hinterland to get between Vegas and San Francisco really brings you back to reality in a harsh and quick way.
Yeah. You did like the full Griffin flight. I just kind of ported back on a plane.
Well, so it was a pretty dry back. It was actually really – I mean, Norm wouldn't know because he was asleep before we hit the city limits of Las Vegas.
Well, he pushed through. He didn't get any sleep.
I slept 2 hours more than him, just to put this in context.
Yeah.
But Norm and Anna and Joey were Anna and Joey hung out for a little bit, and like we went through like shit we learned and shit we're not going to do again, shit we're going to do the same way in the future.
You guys are even working on the way back, doing like post-mortem.
Total commitment.
That is utter commitment.
Total commitment. Norman, of course, was asleep.
Dancing with the fairies. Sandman. Shaking hands with the Sandman.
Yeah. Yeah, go.
Visions of sugar plums dancing in your head.
So, but everybody else is asleep by the time we got to Prim or Pim, whatever the fake Vegas was.
Did you go past the world's largest thermometer?
Where was that?
What?
I think that's between when you drive from LA to Vegas, you go past that.
Well, we split off 15 at California 58, went through Tehachapi, where the wind farm and the Mojave Spaceport, you know, where the SpaceX and all the privatized spaceflight guys
those
are.
Massive hangars.
And they have big giant hangars and like literally like 30,000 windmills.
Yeah.
Lots of windmills.
And I was in no position for anything. Oh, San Francisco, 88 miles away. I could split those eights. Right, I should split those eights. Right.
There you go.
Literally.
Still in the mindset.
Literally. I said, hey, we're only 88 miles from San Francisco. And Norm awakens from consciousness just long enough to say, split the eights.
Split them.
Always split the eights. And then went back to sleep.
Was I right in my assumption? Because I've done this before. And the one reason why I don't like to drive is it's all fun and games when you're driving there. Vegas, woohoo, we're going to have such a good time. But driving back after Vegas has demolished you and turned you into a pale husk of the person you once were, that drive back's not as much fun.
I'm going to tell you a secret. When you are dreading covering a trade show that is a brutal death march of fun.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we have a lot of fun at the trade show. I've said it before, best trade show I've ever been to, good coverage, working with good people, you know, no drama, but it's not something you look forward to ever.
So you're saying
it's like 20-hour days.
You had kind of the reverse. You went there full of anxiety and you came back on a wave of triumph.
Yeah, I mean, there were so many things that could have gone wrong. Like the hotel internet could have been shitty. The furniture could have been bolted down so we couldn't have turned it around and made a live show.
Yeah.
I mean, there were multitudes. That's really the only two I could think. Well, I mean, Joey could have stumbled on something and caught something on fire.
Not been able to make press conferences.
Right.
You know, denied hands-on meetings.
You could have had the stones to be shot by that taser, and that could have gone wrong.
Right. I could have died from the tasing. I feel like that was probably a pretty good choice on my part in retrospect.
Some things you can control.
Yeah. So, I mean, basically.
But it sounds like everything went right.
Everything went right, except for the fact that I, you know, chickened out on the tasing. And we ended up with what I think is like 24, 25 awesome videos, two really good live shows, two okay ones, and, you know, a bunch of good
content. I must say I was very impressed by the level of industry. And again, given that it was kind of a guerrilla operation that you guys were running, you didn't have the resources of like an Engadget or a Gizmodo or one of these sites.
Yeah.
You were basically just
18 people there.
You were running, you ran around with your HD video camera during the day and came back to the suite and working late into the night, just putting out these videos. It was very impressive.
Yeah. I think next year, I mean, hopefully we'll have some more people working for the site next year. They'll take some more crews as well. But I think next year the lesson we learned is that we need more editors, because it would have been nice to get all this video that's coming up this week out last week. You know, so it's all like the week of CES. There's just nothing but shitloads of CES related video. But I mean, I feel like I don't think it could have gone any better.
Do you feel like during the show you were riding a wave of kind of exhilaration from, hey, this is actually working and stuff's coming out and it's looking good?
I'm still on that, I think, probably. I mean, I don't know about
the Friday point.
Yeah, well, I would say even through like Saturday.
No, it started at the Friday point.
Oh, the wave.
The wave.
Yeah. Yeah, once the first Thursday full of content went up and I was like, oh, yeah, we can actually do
this. Yeah, it's like that moment in Rocky when he lands the first good punch.
Yeah.
He's not a machine. He's a man.
Well,
you can hurt him. And that's when you know that things are going to turn.
You know, it's the Hannibal. Hannibal, what's the Hannibal's from?
Smith.
From A-Team?
Yeah, John Hannibal Smith.
John Hannibal Smith. It's a Hannibal Smith moment.
You love it when a plan comes together.
When like at some point you know that you have a good plan, but when you know that the good plan is actually, in theory, is actually a good plan in action.
Yeah.
That is a fucking awesome
moment.
And you
were practically in that suite, like blowtorching shit together and
improvising stuff. Oh, dude, we had a roll of duct tape. It was there.
Yeah, there was a lot of duct tape.
And a lot of beef jerky. We didn't have anybody who was afraid of flying, though.
I think the biggest miracle for me was, drink this milk, Will.
Yeah, hey, Norm, you want
how'd I get here?
What the hell's going on?
I pity the fool who tries to put me on a plane. What I found most impressive, and I don't know how well you scoped this out ahead of time, was just how reliable that hotel internet was.
Well, we'd stayed there before.
Okay. Well, because hotel internet is notorious for being terrible.
Yes.
And yet you actually had a connection that was good enough to live stream video,
yeah,
which is amazing.
Part of it was the timing of live stream, starting at sometimes starting at 12 or 1 o'clock.
Demand was pretty low at that point.
And also
upstream is always less competitive than downstream.
Right.
It's also a building. It's not a traditional hotel that we stayed at. It was that condo suite only place. So I think people who stay there aren't really staying home on the computers every night.
Right. And it wasn't a CES affiliated hotel, which was the other smart move.
Oh.
So
you guys thought this out.
I mean, we literally looked at, I think Melissa came up with like 10 different places that we could have rented that were comparable price and, you know, inside our budget and all that. Worked out really well. I couldn't be more happy. So we did a little bit of a recap on the last live show in Vegas, but I mean, we didn't really talk about what we thought was the best and the worst that we saw while we were there, Norm. And with a little bit of reflection, a little bit of time for reflection, I think, I mean, if you want to go first, you're welcome to, but
Motorola Atrix.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to say. That's
now, what is the Atrix?
That's the phone.
Well, you missed it because you came in late on that day.
Yeah, I keep hearing about the Zoom with an X and the Atrix. I don't know what either of these are.
So the Zoom is their Honeycomb Android tablet. So it's a 10-inch, I think 10-inch or 7-inch?
It's 10 inches.
Yeah, 10-inch, 16 by 9.
So iPad size.
Well, but 16 by 9, so skinnier.
Okay.
Tablet. I'm less excited about that because they weren't running a real demo. It was just a video loop. That was kind of lame, I thought. The Atrix, though, is super cool. It's a Froyo Android phone that has a series of docks, and you can use the phone. When you plug the phone into the dock, then it launches this WebTop OS, like a real lightweight version of Linux, basically, that lets you run real Firefox. You hook a keyboard and mouse up to it. There's a laptop-style dock that has a 12.5-inch screen.
When you plug HDMI from the phone into any video output or a dock, you can run – HDMI, just the dual view, the clone view, or you can launch WebTop, which is their slash-top style instant OS.
So you probably don't know, but on a lot of enthusiast motherboards these days, and even on some like WebTops and stuff like that, like little lightweight computers, the manufacturer will include a special pre-boot environment is what they call it. It's one of the things they call it. Isn't that what it's called, pre-boot environment?
Oh my God, yep.
And it's basically like a real stripped down version of Linux, boots in like 4 seconds and has Firefox and Skype and OpenOffice and like two or three other things. And it's basically just for when either you fucked up your computer and, you know, you need to download some drivers or something like that, or BIOS update.
Mm.
Or if you just want to like log on the internet, check something out and then turn it back off again. You're not really using the computer. You just need to. You check something. Phones have largely obviated the need for that kind of a service.
Yeah, you just do it on the phone.
Yeah, but if your phone does that when hooked up to a hotel TV with like a Bluetooth keyboard and mouse, then essentially you can use your phone as your computer when you're traveling.
Because the web browser on that has tabs. You can play real flash video.
It's real Firefox, yeah.
Did you put a video up on this?
Yeah, we just did it yesterday.
I want to take a look at it.
You should check it out. It's pretty cool. It was, I think, the last thing we shot at the show, and my voice was completely gone. So it's
and also, it's 4-inch screen, it's not quite rendered display resolution. It is very close. It's they call it quarter HD, QHD. So whatever, it's 960 by 540.
Yeah, 960 by 540.
So one half.
So it's higher. It's almost retina display.
1080.
All right.
And that's coming out in quarter one. So the thing that we saw at CES was that the only phones we saw really are things that are coming out real soon. I mean, it seems like CTIA in March or April is after quarter one phone.
Well, there's Mobile World Congress coming up and then CTIA.
Both of which things we'll be covering in some way, shape, or form. So, best of CES. What's the worst thing you saw, Norm?
I'm about to go with Lady Gaga glasses.
I have to agree.
Yeah.
I was excited about them. I was skeptical, but intrigued when I heard your verbal description.
They're the Spider Jerusalem glasses.
Are they?
They take pictures. They have a camera.
Well, okay. I mean, there's that.
Snap, snap.
But then I saw the video that you guys put up that showed what they're really like, and they just look terrible.
Yeah. The fact that you can't see through them unless you watch.
Well, I thought that was the magic, that it was somehow like a two-way mirror where it could display an image on the glass, but you could still see through it. But that's not the reality.
No, it's a
plastic screen that you kind of peek over.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like that at all. And maybe it looks better in real life than on the video, but it didn't even seem like the images were really on the surface of the screen, but they were like being projected behind the lens of the glasses.
I think there was a glass on top in front of the LED display.
Yeah. I mean, you'd in a dark room, like if you're in a club or something, it would totally look like the lights coming from the lenses.
Yeah, that would look cool in a club. Maybe they're good for clubbing.
Yeah. do you go clubbing a lot these days, Gary?
No, but
I imagine.
For the young people.
I've always heard that there are places where people go to have fun.
Those youngsters might be into kids. Yeah.
They all wear glasses indoors, sunglasses indoors.
I mean, who is this product aimed at?
I think hipsters.
Yeah?
People really love Lady Gaga.
Yeah.
There are a lot of those people.
I know some people. I know people who'd buy the Lady Gaga glasses.
Don't you think wearing these glasses, they would be wearing like 10 Bluetooth headsets at once in terms of
whoa. Stop giving Lady Gaga ideas. 10 Bluetooth headsets at the same time. That's Polaroid's next product.
It's the Douche Master 4000.
I'm just saying the cumulative douche factor is higher than almost anything else. Like this guy walks in wearing these glasses or whoever, no one's going to say, whoa, that's so cool. They're going to say, look at that. Prick.
What I would say is that I think that these glasses are going to go from cool to not cool faster than any other product in recorded history.
I think before they're even launched, they'll become not cool.
They're a real product, but they're also not a real product. That's the Lady Gaga signature product in her line. Gray
House of Gaga.
Gray House.
Oh, gray.
Is it going to be commercially released?
It is going to be commercially released, but there are two other products in that line which are more practical products.
Like photo printers, right?
And a picture framed thing. That she also contributed design to.
Mm. Wow, Lady Gaga designing photo printers.
Yeah.
Wow.
Creative director.
What could be cooler than that?
I think the worst thing I saw was that Audi booth, the blinder. The white hot life of the
unconstructed dream space.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I don't know what they were showing in there. There were some cool looking cars. I like cars. And it was like THX 1138 white in there.
It was.
But beyond that, I don't know what they were there for. They had a dashboard that was kind of cool. I sat in a seat.
It's more of a prestige thing. We gotta give an honorable mention. I mean, I don't know if we're listing our top items, but that Sony 3D glasses.
Well, I think all of the Sony R&D stuff. The Sony glasses free was better than any of the other glasses free stuff we saw.
Audio stereoscopic, autoerotic.
Yeah, except the one notable exception to the Sony stuff is that Toshiba laptop that had the eye tracking autoerotic auto stereoscopic screen was awesome. Like it worked really well.
It worked pretty well, but it's one small screen, one person.
Yeah, of course.
And you need actual computer.
But I mean, the Sony audio stereoscopic stuff was really, really spectacular, and it worked from. I mean, it was a kind of controlled room, but it worked pretty well within that control.
But you know, the Sony headset thing, that felt like a real product.
That's the one thing that if I could have tried anything, I would like to have tried that.
The headset.
The Geordi LaForge visor.
Yeah, the only problem with that thing is it weighed like 5 or 6 pounds. It was really heavy.
Yeah.
But I mean, if they shrink that down, make it into a pair of sunglasses.
I'm totally there.
I'd say if it's maybe half the size and there was some type of head harness or maybe you just wear it when you're laying down. I think that's
so. You're saying awesome. You need a product you need to wear in a reclined position.
Well, you know, if you're lying in bed, I don't want to buy giant TV for my bedroom, sucking up tons of electricity. I'm lying in bed anyway. I don't want to sit up. I can lie in bed and watch.
And the nice thing about that is it'll also serve as a form of birth control. Anybody comes to your bedroom, they see you wearing those. They're just going to turn around and leave
immediately.
Yeah.
So the big discussion about 3D leading up to the show was, you know, a lot of people have been saying that 3D. TV is not going to take off until they can find a way to make it work without the glasses.
Yes.
And we did see some of these TVs at CES. Yeah. Having seen them, do you feel like they cracked it or are they not there yet?
I think it's still probably two at least next year and probably 2 years, maybe even three, before we see that as something that's viable and will actually work in the living room. Toshiba's going to launch their 3D no glasses TV this winter. The viewing angles and the places you have to stand were very, very narrow and very specific. I don't think that's going to do well.
Yeah. So how does that work for like, you know, a family, say, seated in different positions around the living room? That's not going to work.
Well,
right?
In Toshiba, you have three seats right now, three possible optimal viewing angles.
Yeah. Okay.
They're hoping to increase that. And if you increase that, you increase by two at a time. So hopefully five by the time this product comes out. So on a couch, I mean, the angles, I mean, right now the three are very close together. It's basically like one's at a straight angle, one's like 15 degrees to the left and 15 degrees to the right.
Mm.
The problem seems to be standing too far to the left or right of the screen.
Yeah.
And so once they fix that, it's more practical.
But I can't. But I can't sit anywhere within that cone. I either have to sit like at the 12 o'clock position, or at the 2 o'clock or 4 o'clock position.
Yeah, on the Sony stuff, it seemed like it was anywhere in the room, but there was a lot more kind of visual noise on top of the picture on the Sony technology. Of course, the Sony thing has no ETA. It's not a this year product. It's something that they have been working on. It uses some sort of crazy Sony proprietary technology that's exclusive to them.
This all sounds very wait and see to me.
The one thing also
next year after
that we realized, I think it was smart of them to do, is that this is how they're going to get 4K, 2K TVs on the market. Because from a content perspective, like there's more 3D content coming up, and the next logical resolution jump is jump to 4K. We're not going to get 4K content anytime soon. Cameras just aren't available yet.
That's film resolution. All they need is better film transfers.
Yeah, there's a bandwidth problem with that.
Blu-ray theoretically with multiple layer Blu-ray should be able to hold big enough data to hold 4K video files.
Yeah, but it's diminishing returns also because you can't really notice it when you're sitting like 15 feet away from the TV.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, if you're talking about a Retina display pixel density on a TV,
that's pointless.
Oh, that would be nice though.
But it's pointless. I mean,
it looks good
unless you have better than 20/20 vision. But so where they're going to make use of that 4K 2K TV technology, which is available right now. I mean, R&D labs have had
Sharp
it for a
showed
while,
something last year even
is in the autostereoscopic televisions and also the passive glasses, so the lenticular displays where.
Well, no, passive glasses is polarized, not lenticular.
Polarized glasses, polarized screens, where the resolution is still cut in half, but if you're cutting it down from 4K, then you're still going to see 1080p.
Right. The thing is, the passive glasses are much more comfortable. It's a much better experience. Losing half of my vertical or horizontal resolution to get passive 3D is not something I'm ever going to be okay with because
At the Vizio booth, you said you didn't notice.
When I went back and looked at it again, you could kind of tell. The thing is, you look for once you start looking at it pretty good, then you can tell. On a quick glance at Best Buy, you're never going to probably notice. But it is a better experience than having the great big heavy glasses. The other thing is the glasses, the active glasses are advancing pretty quickly too. The Samsung's new super thin glasses, which didn't fit on over my normal glasses particularly well, were awesome if you didn't wear glasses. I mean, fantastic. Really light. Didn't even know. I'm lighter than my normal eyeglasses, it seemed like, which I thought was good. And I think we'll see more of that in the coming year. It also seems like a lot of companies are making third-party glasses that are significantly better than the first-party ones that'll work with multiple kinds of TVs.
Yeah, I mean, these first and second-generation glasses are looking very goofy.
Yeah, my big super square Panasonic specs. Not looking real cool right now.
No.
So the thing is, I still don't think people are really that excited about 3D.
They're not. Because the thing is, it ain't that great.
And there's no content. It's the other problem. I mean, if you go to the store and you want to buy 3D movies, you have Despicable Me, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, and then a whole bunch of shit like Clash of the Titans and you know, Roger Zemeckis.
Well, I don't
want to
pay that. I don't pay extras.
I did read a story about how, you know, the TV programming is starting to ramp up. ESPN's 3D channel is now going 24/7, not just, you know, whenever there's something they can show in 3D.
That's just bundled too on demand.
Right. And there are there's going to be more programming available. I think it's going to be more about excuse me, I step away from the mic to cough. I think it's going to be more about just regular programming in 3D rather than, you know, Blu-ray movies and things that people have to seek out. I think it needs to be stuff that can just be put in front of you.
Absolutely.
But it didn't seem like there was any one segment or market area this year that really defined CES. Like going into it, a lot of the talk was this is going to be the year of the tablet, and it didn't seem like that really happened.
Well, we were talking. I mean, I think that that's because of the market that consumer electronics market has really matured. You know, in the old days, it used to be that there would be some new, neat new application combining multiple technologies, whether it's big CPU power and bandwidth and lasers to make Blu-ray, or advances in LCD technology to make thin HDTVs, or, you know, we're kind of getting to a point where there aren't any real obvious, huge, life-changing products that can be made by combining existing technologies anymore.
Well, I think Google fucked all the tablet makers. Because Honeycomb isn't ready yet. If Google had Honeycomb, which it's very – I mean they have working prototypes and I think it's pretty close.
Well, they just shipped Gingerbread 3 weeks ago.
Well, Gingerbread and Honeycomb are two different things. Honeycomb is tablet.
And tablet makers simply aren't going to invest in their own operating system when they can just use this.
Yes. Well,
some are. I mean, RIM is.
Well, that's why they're going to go bankrupt.
I think if Google and Honeycomb ready for CES, and because obviously the hardware look right, and like Toshiba and Motorola and other third-party makers, the hardware's there. It's not going to change much from last year to this year. They could have had Honeycomb tablets ready for sale
now, this
month. Have it hard launch at CES. That's the only way they're going to really capture market share from iPad, because everyone knows you wait too long, iPad 2 comes out, and then it's another catch-up game.
Well, this is the thing. Maybe I expected too much, but I did kind of expect in the first CES after the unveiling of the iPad, and almost a full year after the iPad arrived and basically created this incredibly lucrative new segment of the market, that there would be more on show.
But 9 months is a snap of the fingers in product development times. I mean, if you look at what – I mean, we looked at some stuff that they'd been working on for 8 or 10 years. It takes a long time to develop this, and everybody had kind of blown off tablets and touch in general as for phones or a joke, because Microsoft's consistent failures with tablet edition PCs. So, lots of companies were going from a standing start, including, I think, probably Google. This, speaking of Google, I mean, this was a bad show for Google. I mean, Android was huge, so that's good.
Why was it bad show?
Well, but, Google TV, which should have made its roaring debut at this show.
Yeah, they had to pull that back. Yep.
And, I mean, the only place you saw it was at Google and Logitech's booth, and they were both pushing it real hard.
Oh, yeah. Sony is already committed to those big posters.
Yeah. I mean, there were 40-foot banners with Google TV on it and that retarded remote. And I mean, you're just looking at it thinking, why are you guys even here? Don't bring that shit here. Everybody knows this is bad. And you could tell. I mean, it's the first time I've been to CES in years that Sony's booth wasn't packed all the time.
Mm.
And I mean, nobody was interested in Google. Same thing for Logitech. I mean, I almost feel bad for those companies.
Yeah.
Except for they were out there selling terrible products to people who didn't know better.
It's already got the stink on it now.
Yeah. And I mean, it's going to be hard to come back from that. They're going to have to really do something amazing with the new releases. I mean, and their partners suffered as well. I mean, Sharp and all the other places that were doing Google TV boxes, Google TV integration, bad for them too.
Yeah, very bad.
The one thing is we did see some more boxy boxes. So I think iOmega has a boxy box coming. We didn't actually get any video with that, but it had favorable reviews, which is interesting coming from an iOmega product. They traditionally don't really review that well, or not reviews, but favorable impressions from different sites. And then there was some other kind of surprise stuff that we didn't get to see. There's a new Chumby that we missed. Chumby version 8, I think, is the new version of the software that's going to run. That's kind of the fancy internet alarm clock, which I like because, A, it gives me the weather and like Facebook photos, and also because it has USB ports so I can charge my iPhone on it.
But again, big picture, it doesn't seem like I'm coming out of CES and kind of looking back over it, that any kind of big picture emerges of big trends going forward.
No. And I think we should assume that that's probably going to be the way it is for the foreseeable future. I mean, it's that market, that consumer electronics market, is so mature at this point that we're looking at incremental enhancements, and there'll be revolutions every 10 years instead of every year.
Companies don't feel pressure to actually launch their stuff at CES. I mean, just because
it's a bad time to launch stuff.
If you think about it, it is a very bad time to launch stuff. And the only reason they used to do it before is because that's where all the journalists would be. And that's when consumer electronics gets a spotlight in national media. But now that's not the case. You can launch it. Have your host your own event. As long as it's a good product, everyone's going to talk about it. It's going to sell.
And right. I would argue that the maturation of the market, the extent to which technology has matured, is evident in some of these pointless products that you saw there. Basically solving problems that don't exist, like a fridge that plays pop music. Like, who gives a shit?
Or the robo toilet seat?
Yeah, things like that.
I think there's always been. I mean, CES is one of those shows that if you're a mad scientist inventor type, then you can spend 10 grand, bring your crazy prototype there and let people see it. The trying to capture the future, like the Imagine a World guy and the Samsung phone fridge with Pandora and all that. I mean, I think that's a symptom of the larger of the jetpack syndrome, right? Everybody's looking around saying, man, it's fucking 2011. Where are my jetpacks? And, they're fundamentally not getting
what the future is. Everything is good enough, and they have annual, profit margins they need to make, and they need to this year to be better than last year.
The thing is, we do have jetpacks. We have things like the iPhone. which 10 or 15 years ago, you would have blown your fucking mind to see that.
10 years ago, my computer was slower than the iPhone.
Yeah.
In every way. Screen was lower resolution. Yeah. Internet connection was slower.
I mean, even Back to the Future 2 didn't even predict some of the stuff that we have. You know, we actually went beyond that in many ways.
Yeah, because aren't we coming up on the time when they went forward?
Yeah, we're only 4 years away, 2015.
2015? Wow.
And they had self-drying jackets and self-lacing sneakers and hoverboards. Well, hoverboards,
but that's all useless shit. Hoverboards
and flying cars aside, I would trade all that shit in for smartphones and the connected devices we have today.
Well, the big thing we're missing, I think, from the future as I envisioned it as a kid is like, you know, HUDs on your contact lenses or glasses or whatever.
But that's coming.
We're getting there.
That was on the site this morning, right?
Yeah, we're seeing that, right?
I think it's an interesting time. And then, you know, the private space flight and all that stuff is going to, I think, we'll see a huge, huge, huge advance in pace of technology, akin to what we saw during the Apollo program when, you know, people were just inventing all sorts of crazy new shit left and right in support of the space efforts.
Also, the problem, the problem with just innovation right now is that so much of resources are going into software engineering and just remanipulating the, you know, trying to capitalize
chasing Apple.
Chasing Facebook mostly, because so much money is made off these, you know, off the long tail of advertising and social networking. And that's taking away, because it's easy risk. It's so easy to create a site like that as opposed to spending hundreds of millions of dollars creating an actual product.
Well, hardware is hard is the lesson.
The commercial space flight and space tourism and all that doesn't interest me at all.
Really?
Are you kidding me? Did you not watch the NASA video?
Yeah, well, dude.
The problem with it is it is as Neil Tyson would say, going where many men have gone before. Like, we're not doing anything new. Like, it's great if you've got a lot of money to be able to go up into space and go, oh, wow, look, I'm in space. But who gives a shit? Like,
who wants us to go to Mars?
Yeah, I want
– well, I'd like to go to Mars.
Yeah, I want the government to sack up and give NASA some serious money and let's fucking go to Mars. Let's do some real shit that we haven't done before. That's what's exciting.
But
not fucking joyriding around in orbit.
You got to do one to do the other.
Yeah,
we've done the one already.
But we need a gas station in space.
There's a very little point going, you know, new frontiers. If once you reach it, then you don't do anything with it, right? You use simultaneously, and if I had to choose one, yeah, sure, I'd pick the Mars project over commercial spaceflight. But I don't want a Mars project where we don't eventually have everyone go to Mars and we colonize, you know.
Well, sure. And I'm sure, you know, that probably not within our lifetimes, but we eventually will do that. I'm just saying that these commercial ventures.
Speak for yourself. I plan on living forever.
Well, who knows what the future may hold. Did you see any longevity technology at CES?
There's a whole bunch of fitness stuff. But
yeah.
I saw a treadmill that connects to Google.
That's thinking too small.
That's not going to make you live much. Again, it's not really doing much.
I mean, if I really wanted to live a long time, I'd start eating sub 1,500 calories and minimal protein and no fat and eat a whole shitload of pills. I'm just going to gamble that by the time I'm about ready to croak, science will have reversed aging.
Yeah, well, they are working on it. There are people working in the fields of genetics that are trying to figure out. They unlock one gene and that's it. Boom, you live forever.
That's got to be the worst thing ever. I think we are in such a risky age where we're so close. We could reach a point where by the time it happens, we are just too old to qualify.
What if you die 3 months before the anti-aging stuff is discovered?
Also, I mean, like, if you die, like if you reach like 80 years old and like, you know, by the time – we're all 80. 80 will be normal. But they're like, it's not worth spending the drugs on you. We want to spend it on these new 25-year-olds and have them live forever.
Yeah, but hopefully by the time you're 80, you're rich enough just to pay for it yourself.
Right. The point is –
be like Mr. Burns.
The important thing is we have to all be Monty Burns rich by the time we're that old, or else you know, you don't want to be in the masses. You want to be an early adopter because the people who lead that wave are going to be the rulers forever.
And I don't want to live forever because that sounds kind of awful in its own way. But I'm happy to live – I want like Vulcan lifespan.
I want to live until
like 300 years or something.
No, 2.5.
I want to be master of my destiny. When I get bored, snuff it. I fucking rocket ship straight into the sun I'm doing.
Take a quietus.
Oh, no. Fuck that. I'm not going peacefully in my sleep. I am literally going to get into a rocket ship and fly into the sun.
That doesn't sound like it would be a good way to go, though.
It's going
to
be quick.
If someone said to me, do you want to burn to death? I would say no. But that's what you're suggesting.
No, you'd roast way before you burn.
You know, if you find
that doesn't sound good either.
You'll see the end of the universe.
That's only in Tron and the tree movie. The Fountain.
No, I was in The Fountain.
Didn't he fly into a black hole in The Fountain?
No.
Spoilers.
If you fly into a black hole, relativity will will make it so that you will see the end of the universe.
Or alternately, you get mashed into a tiny little piece.
That will eventually happen. Yes, you'll be stretched.
Right.
Microscopic
normularity. So, Gary, you tweeted something really interesting the other day. You said,
"Did
you
I?"
I know it's kind of surprising.
I find that hard to believe.
You said you were talking to some NASA engineers, learning about Lagrange points,
Lagrangian points,
yes.
Or Lagrange points, however you want to pronounce them.
This isn't really technology; it's kind of science, but
it's fascinating. Though I've actually been learning about a lot. I've been talking to a bunch of. I'm working on a project right now, which is takes place in space.
Okay,
and so you know, you want to. I'm determined that it be scientifically accurate. You know, every year. Or every now and again, NASA and these people at a place called the Science and Entertainment Exchange put out a list of the movies that they feel are the worst offenders scientifically.
So like Mission to Mars.
The Core,
like
Armageddon, you know, The Day After Tomorrow, 2012. Basically everything Roland Emmerich's ever done.
Contact.
Contact's on the good boy list.
Contact's one of my favorite movies of all time. Suck it, Smith.
Contact, you like Contact?
Love Contact.
I need to watch Contact.
Contact is one of the few movies that scientists will go, it's not bad.
At the end, it's for Carl.
They don't have any real problems.
Well, I like Carl. I'm pro Carl. Okay,
he
so
wrote the movie.
I understand that he wrote it. I just thought it was kind of
you didn't like it?
I watched it so long ago, I don't feel like I'm qualified to talk about it.
Well, anyway, I don't want any movie that I write to ever be on one of those lists.
Right on.
Really?
Man.
You don't even want to be on the good list?
No, I want to be on the good list. I don't want to be on the bad list where
I'm going to point out
they make fun of how awful the science is.
Armageddon made bank, dude.
Well, yeah, but I think you can make the bank and still, you know, keep yourself respect scientifically.
Okay, you think you can tell a nerd-friendly, awesome story.
Deep Impact made bank, and that was much more.
I like Deep Impact a lot, actually. Yeah.
That one was more scientifically accurate.
Okay, fair enough.
So, anyway.
And it had, what's his name? Robert Duvall.
And Jon Favreau.
Yeah.
John Favreau's Deep Impact?
All our favorites. No, yeah, no. He was one of the astronauts.
He was on Spaceship.
See, that's unbelievable.
He was on The Messiah.
He was skinny then. It was skinny Favreau.
Okay.
That was kind of a weird year because both of those movies came out that year. They both
never
had the asteroid.
Again, well, or the children of this world know a summer where two asteroid movies came out at the same time.
Well, we had two volcano movies this same year as well.
Dante's Peak and
Volcano. Dante's Peak and Volcano.
Both were awesome.
Tommy Lee Jones and Pierce Brosnan?
Yeah. Head to head.
Linda Hamilton was in Dante's Peak.
Uh-huh. I think Dante's Peak was by far the superior of those.
Oh, are you kidding me? Volcano in L.A.? Let's collapse a skyscraper to block the path. Didn't you love that scene with the police cars?
Oh, okay. I was thinking, is Tommy Lee Jones a volcano?
No, yes, he is.
Oh, okay.
Tommy Lee Jones is the main volcano guy.
Tommy Lee Jones.
I liked it at the end when they're all covered in ash and the kid goes, they all look the same.
Yeah.
And we realize that underneath we are all the same.
We learned
we're the monsters, not the volcano.
Yes. Yes.
So the movie that made the top of the good list was actually
saw this list as well?
I saw the list. The movie that made the top of the good list was Gattaca.
Oh,
that's right.
Gattaca
is very very held in high regard with, you know, genetics.
Because of the accuracy in genetic profiling.
I believe so.
Yeah, it's gonna happen.
So
imagine a world.
Lagrangian points are fascinating.
Yeah, it's like
as you said, they're like
space.
Parking lots in space. They're basically points. In kind of layman's terms, I'll do my best. Basically, a point in space that exists between two large bodies in space, like the Earth and the Moon, which exert their own gravitational forces. And anywhere in space, you're going to be subject to the gravitational force of one or the other.
Right.
But there's a point kind of right in the middle, which is like a dead spot where it cancels each other out.
Well, and there's multiples between.
Yeah,
all
there
sorts
are. There's five.
Yeah.
There's five major ones near us.
Well, there's ones between like the Earth and the Sun and other stuff too, right?
Yeah, and I was learning about one called L5. Which is kind of like a perfect – if you imagine space like an ocean, it's like a perfectly calm,
it's like behind,
still
behind,
piece of
on
ocean.
On the other side, right?
Yes. I think somewhere it's between us and the moon.
Okay.
Basically if you wanted to build an interstellar spaceship,
right,
you wouldn't do it on Earth because it would be too difficult to launch into space.
Right.
You would build it in space.
You fire up the pieces individually.
And you would want to build it at one of these Lagrangian points because it would be – things wouldn't be floating away. It's basically completely like a static vacuum.
It doesn't
space.
Take a lot of energy to stay in that spot. You just kind of do minor station keeping, right?
You can leave that spot pretty easily too.
So it's fascinating. I learned, really interesting.
Cool. Okay, well, that's it.
A little expedition into kind of very high tech.
You talked to some
I don't know how you
nerds.
Would test that. That might be different. That might be beyond your resources.
Mm. Probably. I mean, we could get a big weather balloon and some scuba gear.
I don't think you could create a Lagrangian point here on Earth.
Well, No, probably not. We're probably too close to Earth.
Gravity is pretty I'm fascinated by the concept of gravity overall. It's just so interesting.
Well, it's just such a weak force that we think of as very strong because we are, you know, it's a major force in our lives.
Right.
But on a cosmic scale, gravity is infinitesimal.
Right.
You know, it's hardly anything. You get too far away from anything,
well,
no gravity.
Although inside a black hole, gravity becomes so immense.
Well, that's an isolated point.
Right.
See what I did there?
But when you think about it, it's very good. When you think about it, I'm constantly kind of in awe when I think about just how smart Newton was to have figured this stuff out. Like, I think, you know, we're quite happy to walk around just assuming that things just fall towards the ground because they're heavy. Well, not because some force is being exerted on them. That's really, to have discovered that, I think you have to be a genius.
I like to think that those guys, those early scientists, were kind of like Jerry Seinfelds of their time. You know, they were the observational
comics.
What
is the deal with this apple falling on my head?
What? Does apples and feathers fall at the same speed? I don't know. So one of the things, like, before Avatar came out and I realized it was a shitty love story and not an awesome science fiction movie.
Well, it's both.
Mutually exclusive.
Okay, whatever. I went and read all of the stuff that Cameron posted in his wiki about the Pandorapedia or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Which was like the amount of thought that went into the designs for those ships that travel, you know. He had really worked out and he's like, okay, here's what it's going to take. It's going to take this much energy and it's going to cost this much. And like, if something goes wrong with the hibernation things, we're not going to have enough food for everybody. So we'll just kill them in the hibernation pods.
He is Mr. Serious Super Research Guy.
Yeah. I mean, and
these are the fun things to think about.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a giant thought experiment that he then made a movie about.
Yeah. I think it's maybe mentioned once or twice in Avatar as a throwaway, but you know, when they travel from Earth to Pandora, I mean, it takes years to get there.
Yeah. It's like the amount of time, assuming that you could get a giant ass ship up to like 0.3 light speed, you know, then yeah. I mean, the time's right, the whole nine yards. And it's, of course, to Alpha Centauri, right? Which is the closest star.
Yeah. It's in the neighborhood, you know?
That's right.
Of course, then the question happens when you're talking about these great long – we're completely off topic here, but I'm enjoying the conversation, so we'll keep going. When you're going to these massive distances below light speed, what happens, you know, when you have this – I just read a book about this actually. What happens when you're you know, slower than light speed ship and we're back on Earth? We develop faster than light speed travel.
They catch up.
Right.
They can catch up or pass.
Like, you can get where you're going.
But they've done several trips, right? I mean, they've done
Pandora,
so many trips.
Yeah.
Yes. In that fiction, and I'm sure, you know, the pilots are experienced. It's like they train to be pilots once and then they do four trips and that's their entire career.
Right.
Then they retire.
Well, and the analog there is like, you know, spice traffic to the East Indies or you know, whatever.
Isn't there also a relativistic kind of factor, though, of the time in transit may not be the time that's elapsed on the destination
plane? No, if you're moving only 0.3 light speed, it's not going to
– Yeah, it's not that big a deal.
That big of a deal.
You have to get up above point – if my Star Trek fiction is correct, you have to be significantly faster than half of the speed of light.
Also, at that point in that fiction, Earth is such a shithole that, you know, there is no advancement going on in Earth.
That's true. It's all on Pandora.
They're just happy to get off the planet.
Yeah. So yeah, I just read a book by this guy named Greg Bear called Hold 03 that I thought was really good. And about moving forward. Anyway, doesn't matter.
I'm reading a book at the moment called Death from the Skies, which is all about written by one of these kind of populist scientists. You know, one of these guys who writes
Carl Sagan type.
Yeah, these guys that write books that regular people can read. And it's about all the different ways that life on Earth could
end.
Yeah, basically Earth could be destroyed.
But you know, that's how Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy started out originally.
Oh, is that right?
It was originally going to be a book called – or a radio drama called The Ends of – Seven Ends of Earth. And it was seven different ways the world can end. And then, you know, out of that was born Arthur Dent.
I was learning about gamma ray bursts. Do you know what those are?
From a supernova?
They're terrifying. Like basically a pulsar.
Yeah.
Or a collapsing – if a pulsar collapses and it emits in 1 second more energy than our sun emits in its entire 10 billion year lifespan.
So it's a pretty bad day for anybody.
Basically anything within 3,000 or 4,000 light years is fucking gone, including Earth.
Well, I thought it was just half of Earth on a
And there's no
pulse.
There's no Bruce Willis in this scenario. Like, no. You
can't put like a tinfoil umbrella up that covers the entire Earth.
No, you're pretty much finished. The other thing I read about, it was the equivalent of a 10 megaton nuclear bomb being detonated over every square mile of the surface of the Earth.
That's a pretty bad day.
Yes. Wait. In 3 seconds,
In a few seconds, it emits more energy than the sun
has ever
in its 10 billion year lifespan.
Yeah, well,
I'm sure there will be some listeners that will correct us on this, but that's what I read.
That's
in this
a fuckload of energy. That's
a fuckload of energy.
Well, the thing this is where the human mind just can't grasp cosmic scales.
You can barely comprehend the amount of energy the sun puts out in a second because we get a minuscule fraction of that.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is like supernovas. Supernovas are the same kind of situation where if a supernova explodes in your general galactic vicinity, poof, half of the planet is wiped clean.
Yeah, and there's no warning.
No.
Like we're here and then boom.
It moves at the speed of light.
Yep, it's pretty much over.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, it could be like, so that could have happened.
It could have happened like 2 minutes ago. We're in the basement.
Well, it could have happened before we were born. And if it was more than 50 light years away.
Right.
It would still be on its way here.
You could already be dead.
Yep. Not much you can do about it.
Your men are already dead.
That's so. Just enjoy your life. I say. You know, treat every day as though it could be your last.
Have a good day.
Go to the spa.
So I'm going to play the news transition music here, and then we'll talk about some news.
I like it when we talk about highfalutin stuff.
I know. Well, this
even though we're completely ignorant of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything we know came from Star Trek, Star Wars, and shit that we read.
Pretty much.
By the way, if you want one of those science books that teaches you science and for morons, basically, how to teach physics to your dog, brilliant book.
Oh, yeah?
I can't remember the dude's name who read it, but it's really good. Highly recommended.
Good.
Yeah. It's like a whole series of thought experiments about how he would explain to his kind of dim bulb dog how physics works.
Oh, yeah. That's
about my level.
Went to school. Was, Physics for Future Presidents was the name of the course.
Wow, that's kind of insulting. Yeah. Poli Sci people. So there's a few stories. We missed some stuff last week because we were at CES. In case you guys hadn't heard, yesterday Verizon announced that they finally the our long national nightmare is over and the iPhone is coming to Verizon.
You better believe I heard about it.
So here's the background is it's iPhone 4. It's not LTE, which is Verizon's fourth generation 4G super fast network. And it's going to be coming out soon, like in the next 30 days, right?
February 10th.
February 3rd or 10th. 3rd is for pre-order, existing Verizon customers. 10th in stores for everyone else.
So how do you guys feel about this?
Could not care less.
You already have an iPhone 4.
I have an iPhone. I'm stuck on a contract. It's not LTE.
Would you have dropped the contract for LTE?
For LTE, I would have I wouldn't because I would still wait for the summer.
Gary?
Well, now, as much as I've said on many occasions how much I desperately want to get out of my AT&T contract.
I almost saved the clip of you describing exactly how you were going to call AT&T and make them beg to keep
it. I still think that's going to happen. I still think I'm going to do that. I'm just saying I'm not unconditionally excited about that. I am conditionally excited. First of all, I'm not going to jump February 10th.
Okay.
Because
you want to see what happens.
Well, that too. But more importantly, if I'm going to pick up a new Verizon contract, I'd rather do it with the new phone in July.
Right. It seems foolish. Especially, I mean, like I could see if you're an iPhone 3 user, 3G user, and you're sitting out a contract thinking, oh, man, I got to get fucking out. This is horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible. Horrible. But, I mean, if you're an iPhone – if you bought an iPhone 4 already or even a 3GS, I think – I think you ride it out. You want to see what happens in June because, I mean, there's a couple of big questions here. First off, is there going to be a lag between the GSM phone releases and the CDMA phone release?
Yeah, who knows?
I mean, they wouldn't say yesterday in the press conference, and that could mean anything. Like usually somebody doesn't say something, you assume the worst. But in this case, I'm not sure which is the worst. Is the worst that they're releasing a lame duck phone in February that's going to be outdated 4 months later when they launch the iPhone 4X or 4GS or 4 or 5 or whatever in June? Or is Verizon always going to lag 6 months behind because it uses a different kind of cell technology and takes a little longer to develop?
I think if they lag behind, that's clearly the worst thing. Lame duck phone or not, lame duck phone just means that a million people would be disappointed. Both are offensive. Both are not ideal, but they want to get it out now. And I think they look at the contracts and how many people are qualified for a new phone now. And I think most people qualify in the summer. And –
Well, the thing is,
I think the timing is weird. I mean, if you know anything about update cycles and when the new iPhone comes out, why would you lock yourself into a new 2-year contract on the iPhone just a few months before the brand new one comes out.
Well, I mean, I think so. There's a couple of places I think that they're going to have good luck. I think that there's a lot of Verizon corporate customers who probably have been dying to get on the iPhone, and they're outside of the normal 2-year update cycle, right? The other thing is I think that there are probably a lot of people on Verizon who don't want to get Android phones, want to ditch their Blackberries or old feature phones even, and they're looking for something. And, you know, maybe they're not aware of the brutal Apple upgrade cycle every year. I don't know how they could miss that. But I think a lot of the people who are buying iPhone on day one for Verizon are probably existing customers who are upgrading.
There's also the possibility as well that we could just be in for an incremental update this year.
I think
if it's a 4S or something, it may not be that big a deal.
I think that it's almost certainly an incremental upgrade this year. But I think we'll see some industrial design changes as well. I mean, I still think that they have to fix the antenna problem. I think that they have to fix the back glass problem. And I think that they have to make a sturdier phone.
So here's what it's going to happen. It's going to be calling it now. It's going to be white iPhone for the summer.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to fix the antenna problem. The back is not going to be glass. It's going to be ceramic. It's going to be – so it's not clear, not right. Completely translucent. And they're going to open for AT&T. They're going to have the mobile hotspot. And the guts will be exactly the same. Screen's going to be the same. And
higher resolution front camera?
Higher resolution front camera, maybe.
Maybe a higher resolution back camera, but still the backlit sensor.
So.
I think that's a pretty fair assessment. They'll probably move the buttons again so you can't use the same cases. Did you guys like that?
Subtle movement of the mute button.
All the buttons on the side of the iPhone 4 Verizon will work with iPhone 4 AT&T cases.
Why did they do that?
Because they sell new cases.
Well, also, they say they had to do it because of the placement of the new antenna band.
Mm-hmm.
But mm-hmm. They really did have to go move it.
I think we all know what's really going on.
That the official iPhone 4 bumper won't work with your pre-iPhone 3GS cables.
So as much as I have complained about AT&T and said I desperately want to get off, I'm not automatically convinced that the Verizon side of the fence is just automatically going to be green.
Well, you want to see if they're going to have the same problem.
So I'm going to. So the main reason is I'm going to wait for the new phone. But in the intervening months will also give me an opportunity to see how Verizon customers are getting on.
Well, and I mean, given the LTE phones that we saw at CES, you know, those chipsets are small, are hot, they're big, they're very power hungry. Those phones are having to be bigger in order to accommodate that. It wouldn't surprise me if we don't see LTE on the June refresh either.
I don't think.
Well, this is my big question: is don't you think there's a chance we might see a Verizon LTE iPhone in the summer?
No, I don't think so.
It's next summer at the earliest. I mean, next spring at the earliest. If we're doing 1 year from February.
But if they have LTE Android phones, why can't they put it?
Well,
on
you
the
know
iPhone?
If they had 3G phones when the first iPhone came out too, but Apple did not think that they're ready for it.
If it can't be thin enough and the battery life be good enough, they just won't do it.
Right?
Fuck you.
And you know, 3G on AT&T, when it works, is pretty fast. It's faster than CDMA.
I mean, I think that there's a pretty real chance that AT&T or iPhone 4 customers, assuming it's the network and not the phone. I mean, that's the other big question.
That's what we'll find out when we go to Verizon.
I mean, theoretically, yeah.
They also say the Verizon iPhones do not have the death grip. Possibly because of the
additional antenna. That's bullshit, though. Anand and I were talking about that last night on Twitter. The death grip is a physics problem by putting the antenna on the outside of the phone where skin can touch it. That it's going to continue – unless they're putting some sort of translucent coating. Physics says if you put water in between an antenna and the signal is going to go down.
Now
– physics is always right. That's
a couple of other things that bug me about the Verizon iPhone.
Okay.
One is no voice and data simultaneously.
Well, that's a CDMA problem.
Well, regardless, I don't
How often
like,
do you use that?
Not that often. I like to have it. It's nice to know it's there.
It's good when you're
it's
talking
like a warranty.
You're checking on the phone, and then you turn to speaker mode, and you can actually hit the home button.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
And check Twitter or check something quickly online.
No world phone is a bummer. I don't travel internationally that much, but again, that's nice to know it's there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, and the voice and data at the same time, I guess, comes into play a lot. Like if you're driving and using a nav software or something like that.
Now, Verizon for new, the other thing that may be the tipping point. I'm grandfathered in, so I'm all good. But for a lot of new customers, I would, as a heavy data user, I would go with the company that's going to offer me an unlimited data plan. And it looks like that's Verizon and not AT&T.
Are you a heavy data user?
I don't meter it because I don't need to. But I think if I were to meter it,
you feel
it,
like you are.
I feel like and even if I'm not, I don't ever want to. I don't like that constant low level anxiety of worrying about how much data I'm using every time I.
We did a test on this. You can check on the AT&T site how much data you've used in your last billing cycle.
I used 768 megabytes last week, and that was with an 11-hour live stream.
Hold on, let me check. Let me check right now because I can do it on my on my AT&T app here.
I'm a fairly heavy data user because I check Twitter and websites. Well, all
Twitter's
the time.
Not exactly heavy data.
Well, I check a website. I have like 7 windows open on Safari, but my average is 600 megs a month of
which
data,
which is way under the two,
way under 2 gigs, and even January. When I use heavy data for CS for live streaming and checking stuff on the floor, I'm only up to 600 megs used so far this month.
Okay, I'm checking my usage right now.
You guys got to log in.
I'm logged in.
Mine was 765 megabytes for the month as of like yesterday.
All right, let me look. All right, data. Oh, I'm over my texting. That Vegas trip killed me.
Texting is different, though.
Oh, you can. I know, but I'm 29 texts over. You know they're going to screw me on that. What do they charge for overage?
It's $3.
Is it what?
It's 15 or 10. I was 275 texts over, thanks to GroupMe. So I actually just switched Gina and me to an unlimited plan.
How much do they charge for a text over?
It's 10 or 15 cents per.
I think it's 10 cents per text.
Fuck.
I'm on the 1,500 texts a month and
right,
I never
so
got
So I am
that.
9 yeah, days into my billing cycle and I've used 105 megabytes.
Oh, come on. That's nothing.
Yeah. You're nowhere near.
Nothing.
Yeah. So I'd actually be fine with the 2 gig plan.
I think. 2 gig plan, you'd be totally. But I'm not going to change at this point because that way I can do stupid stuff like an 11-hour live stream and not worry about it. The texting, interesting note, if you have two, because Gina always was on the 1,500 text plan. If you have two people on the 1,500 text plan, it's the same as a family unlimited plan. So for us, it's $15 each or $30 for unlimited. So we just switched to $30 unlimited.
So what do you think the effect of the iPhone coming to Verizon is? People have been talking about it for years and years now, and it's finally happening. Is it going to change the phone landscape?
I think for right now, until June, it's going to just be people who are already Verizon customers who wanted an iPhone and couldn't get it that are switching.
But come July, a lot of people are going to have to make a choice.
I think June and July are going to be very telling, and I think there are going to be a lot of people bailing out of AT&T.
And I would expect to see a very... very vigorous campaign of negative campaigning on both sides.
Yeah,
Verizon and AT&T are going to be taking shots at each other.
We're already seeing that. We're already seeing AT&T running ads where people are talking on the phone and doing data at the same time.
Right.
And Verizon is just going to be like, look, motherfuckers, our network works. You can make phone calls. People can call you and it will ring.
Which is a very compelling argument.
Right. I mean, if you use your phone as a phone, yes.
Yeah.
So
why do you think – how do you think they got this deal? Because – Verizon and Apple.
Well, it's not an exclusive deal.
They've been working on this deal for about 2 years now. They've been working on the hardware for a long time, and the business part of it, you know, happened in a day. But AT&T, everyone said, had a exclusive contract till 2013. Do you think it's feasible that Steve Jobs went to AT&T and said, "I know we have this contract, but if you don't let me give it to Verizon, then after 2013." No iPhone for you forever.
What Jobs said was, do you remember how we fucked you on the iPhone, the first iTunes phone, the Motorola Rocker?
Oh my God, I remember that.
We will
thing.
Give you an iPhone 5 that is every bit as shitty as that thing if you don't let us loose.
Empty threat, though. He's not going to release a bad product just to annoy AT&T.
Well,
I think he threatened to take him away in 2013.
Yeah, I mean, he could have been.
The other thing is,
it's unclear that there actually was a 2013 contract. The 2010 contract was established.
No, the
that was in AT&T financials.
But I like Norm's theory better, that he could have said, either let us do this deal now and share with Verizon, or we'll just or make us wait, and then we'll go exclusively to Verizon. Then you'll be fucked.
Yeah.
I think it would be really hard for Apple to go exclusive Verizon at this point because of the customer base that's on AT&T.
This will probably do wonders also, don't you think, for Apple's market share? I mean, this is a huge section of the market that's now opening up to that.
That's the other thing that's happened, is that Android market share has crept above iPhone. By putting iPhone on the largest carrier in the U.S., it should help stem that tide. And I think it'll also – in two ways. One, a lot more people have it accessible. Two, people are going to have to make a choice between – Motorola and HTC Droid phones on Verizon or the iPhone, and that's a tough choice if you're Joe Schmo. I mean, it's a tough choice for me.
We see AT&T now depending less on iPhone. Like Atrix is AT&T.
Well, it means AT&T has to really step it up on the Android front.
Do you think we're gonna see long lines outside Verizon stores on February 10th?
I don't think so.
I think so.
Really?
I think we'll see lines at least.
If you pre-order, you get it on the first day. You don't
but people aren't
line.
Smart.
It's true. I don't know. I haven't even decided if it's worth us getting one to cover it. I guess we probably should.
Well, I would love it if you did, because I'd love to know what the local coverage is like.
The it's fantastic. I've used Verizon Frontier all the time.
Although there are dead spots. It will work, I think, underground.
Yeah, well, it works on Muni. It doesn't work on BART. The only thing that works on BART is T-Mobile, because they put transceivers in. So yeah, so that is of course the big news. It seems like everybody's taking wait and see until, you know, June. July.
The other thing that we didn't talk about yet is the mobile hotspot, and that's the one differentiating feature between the Verizon iPhone and AT&T's iPhone.
That's
right
a great
now.
Feature, and you think AT&T is going to get that?
AT&T's
as well?
Absolutely going to get it, because it's not a hardware feature; it is just software.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you have a wireless radio and a Wi-Fi radio and the
it's something
radio.
You can jailbreak in right now.
Yes. So the only thing is Verizon hasn't announced any pricing plans for data, including hotspot.
On most Verizon phones, a data plan is either free or $30 a month for the hotspot plan.
So really hopefully depends. It's bundled in. Five devices on the hotspot. I mean –
that's normal. That's the normal
limit. Well, it's at least five. HTC Evo 4G is eight, but it's very nice.
But that's a WiMAX phone. The Pre Plus and all the other phones that we've tested that weren't Evo 4Gs, that weren't WiMAX phones, are all 5 max.
Which is something you use, Gary?
What's that? The hotspot?
The hotspot.
For sure, yeah.
You use it for your MacBook Air?
Yeah, definitely. One of the things I learned, one of the failings of either the hotel or I'm not sure if it's the MacBook Air's fault or the hotel's fault, but my hotel only had wired internet. And of course, the MacBook Air has no Ethernet port.
Oh, you're totally fucked.
I had no internet. But if I'd have had tethering, which is available right now, but fuck tethering,
yeah,
or a Wi-Fi hotspot on my phone, I would have been all good.
Yeah, tethering $30 a month. I don't understand what I use that data for. Is data's data is the way I look at it.
Right.
Feels like that's a kind of shaft.
Yeah, they're charging you a lot of money to just move the data from the phone to your computer.
You know, you should do what we did at the suite and just get a portable router, set that up.
I would love to get like a MiFi.
Airport Express or something. No. I mean something you plug into the wall.
Oh, I see. And just turn the wired into wireless.
Yeah. That's something a market I can see. Like people selling routers that are small enough.
They did that.
Like super small routers, yeah. Like maybe one port, one or two ports and Wi-Fi built
in.
I want that.
The old Airport Expresses are perfect for that.
Oh, you mean the ones that are just the outlets?
The ones that are just the outlets. But also like Linksys and Netgear for a while had whole lines of portable routers for people who travel a bunch. The problem is there's not that many people who travel a bunch and they're all just buying Airport Expresses.
And as much as I want to be excited about the Wi-Fi hotspot on AT&T, because even if I don't switch, that's a nice feature they're adding. Again, their network is so shitty that I don't really know how often I would be able to use it.
You know, I've done a fair amount of Wi-Fi hotspot with the Captivate when I cheated and added Froyo to it illicitly. And that actually worked really well. Like I was able to maintain – it's funny. One day I was in the car driving and I had the iPod Touch and I was FaceTiming my sister. I wasn't driving. My wife was driving. I was FaceTiming my sister from the passenger seat of the car using AT&T's wireless – using an AT&T powered wireless hotspot courtesy of the Captivate.
Right.
Driving down 280.
Oh, I remember you telling me that. It was very impressive. The Jetsons.
Yeah, it was future.
It's very futuristic.
The future! Except for, you know, if you think about it, you really should not, you should just be able to do that over 3G.
And you were FaceTiming Gina in Vegas as well because of the
Well, that wireless. Was the only way I could call her since my fucking phone didn't work.
Let's mention this as well because I kind of expected it going in, but iPhone cell coverage at CES was a fucking catastrophe.
So I had a conversation with one of the Gizmodo editors, Matt Buchanan, is a friend of mine, and he had talked to the – like immediately after his conversation with AT&T about the same thing. What they said was they brought that, you know, there's a limited amount of spectrum that they have license to, right? And there's only so many nodes of cell coverage you can cram into that spectrum. So what they did is when they knew there were going to be problems like at the Venetian on Wednesday when everybody's at the press conferences, they brought in as many portable towers as they are allowed to by the FCC.
They were like those things that they put down in Star Trek to boost the transporter.
Exactly. But basically there were more people and more iPhones.
Pattern enhancers, that's what they're called.
Exactly.
Trying to remember that.
you got to turn it and the light turns on.
That's right.
Yeah, you jam it in the ground and then twist, right?
Yeah, it's just like a big lawn flashlight.
Exactly.
And you twist it and it turns on and suddenly you get a better transporter signal.
Exactly. Anyway, that's where we're at, basically.
But did Verizon have the same problems?
Verizon was spotty but okay. So we had this whole conversation because we sat at lunch in the press room and the lunch was sponsored by Verizon.
Yeah.
So there were a lot of old white guys from Verizon wearing suits in there talking to people. And we were talking to a couple of the Verizon guys and I said, look, this has got to be like the best week of the year for you guys because, you know, AT&T is a no, doesn't work at all. We couldn't get texts from AT&T.
Like, oh my god! At one when the little bar gets to like 90% and then just stops. Does it want to go through?
Yeah. Well, the worst part was when you'd walk out of the convention center at the end of the day, and all of a sudden it would be like a machine gun of texts coming.
Like 50 texts coming at you. In. Yeah.
If your network is so fucked that you can't get texts, I don't understand why the iPhone doesn't go over Wi-Fi when it can't connect to the network to send a text. That seems like a massive oversight to me.
Yeah. Maybe because then they can't charge you for the text. I don't know.
I would be happy to pay. I don't care. I mean,
I just want to use the service.
I just want the motherfucking.
I'm willing to pay for the service. If you will just let me use it.
The microcell offends me on a bunch of different levels. Like, my house is in a known dead spot. I call them and complain about it. They say it's a dead spot. Yet when I want a microcell, it's $150. Yes, my life would be better if I just paid the $150.
Aren't they supposed to give you a free one in those circumstances?
No, every other network does that except for AT&T.
Those motherfuckers.
Yeah.
I'm going to enjoy cutting them loose.
I know. You got a live stream. We'll do a live stream.
We should definitely record it.
No, we're going to do it live. We're not going to record it.
Okay.
Do it during happy hour.
Yeah. Fuck it. We'll do it live.
Fuck it. Let's do it live. I feel like they did everything they could. Like, they bought out the Wi-Fi in the convention center, so all of the Wi-Fi was AT&T Wi-Fi.
I mean, look.
That means that, like, we had free Wi-Fi the whole week when we were at the LVCC.
Mm-hmm.
The Venetian wouldn't do that, apparently. Like, okay. They wouldn't let them buy out Wi-Fi.
Right.
Because they wanted to make money off of it.
Look, I understand that it's CES, and there's a lot of people with iPhones. You see this at Comic-Con and other conventions where a lot of people come into one area, and people there's a lot of traffic. I don't give a shit. If I'm standing in the middle of the fucking Las Vegas Strip, which is one of the most populous and heavily
trafficked. You don't care about
physics. And I'm seeing no service.
Yeah.
Something ain't fucking right. Well, and I'm asking myself what I'm paying $100 a month for.
The bad thing isn't no service. The bad thing is five bars and nothing.
And still nothing getting through. Yeah.
That's the thing that's frustrating to me.
Yeah.
I think that the Verizon deal ultimately means that in 2 years we'll look back at, oh my God, I went to Comic-Con, my phone didn't work for 3 days.
Yeah.
And kind of laugh about it. Because I think that spreading that out across multiple networks will help a ton.
What's it going to take? How far are we? Are we away from having a wireless or a cell network in this country that is completely as reliable as our landlines are today? I mean, are we still in the infancy of that?
Too big a country. It's too big a country and too many places where there's not enough people to make it worth putting up towers. And frankly,
I don't care if I don't get it in the middle of the desert. I just want it to be reliable, you know, in the 98% of the country that they say it is.
I think that'll get better. I mean, one of the other things that I want desperately is better sound quality on phone calls.
Mm.
I mean, the latency that's additional, you know, when you talk on a landline and then you go talk on a cell phone, you immediately notice there's no latency on the landline. The sound quality is a lot better.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no reason with these 4G networks that we can't have better sounding calls. And I don't know if it's going to happen because they still haven't finalized the fucking voice spec for LTE.
Have you tried an LTE voice call yet?
Uh-uh.
Is it supposed to be better?
No, there's no spec. I mean, I think all of the LTE phones are using 3G for voice still.
What's the – are there any LTE phones on the market right now?
Not that are out yet.
But no. Verizon's doing the TV ads, right? So there's got to be some coming
soon. Verizon's doing LTE. All the LTE stuff you can buy right now are dongles and like MiFis and stuff like that.
Okay. When is the first LTE phone coming out?
The first LTE phones will come out in the first half of this year.
Okay.
What Verizon said. So that's Android like the LG Revolution and the – what was the other one we saw? There's a Samsung one. Isn't there a Galaxy S variant that's LTE?
I don't think so.
They're all kind of big and chunky. Lots of battery. So, okay, other news. Last week while we were at CES, Apple counter-programmed and opened the Mac App Store. Have either of you tried that at all?
Yeah, I love it.
Really?
I have not tried it at all.
What a surprise. I'm shocked.
I actually haven't spent a ton of time with it, but I like it a lot. It's basically the app. It's the app store that we know from the iPhone and the iPad. It's very clean and very easy navigation. A lot of stuff on there. The only thing I downloaded was the Twitter, the official Twitter app.
I think everybody did that.
I now prefer that to TweetDeck because I think it's a cleaner interface. It takes up less real estate on my screen. And it now feels standard across all my devices because I use the same app on the iPhone and the iPad.
I don't like how you have to. I don't like that you have to click on shit to start typing, like start a tweet.
Oh, well, I just do Command-N to open a tweet.
Well, that would be the
Okay. So what else have you done? You have only downloaded that one thing.
I downloaded – so I had – like the neat thing I found was I had some apps on my computer that I bought in the past pre-App Store, like Delicious Library and some other stuff like that, that it just said, oh, hey, there's an update for this. You should download this and it's automatically included because I'd already licensed it and all that, which I thought was quite nice.
Oh, I want to just jump back, Rook, just an afterthought on the Verizon iPhone discussion. Somebody tweeted something that I thought was a very good point that I hadn't heard before. But when you think about it, it's kind of obvious. Is that it's going to be fantastic for iPhone app developers because that's a huge market now that's opened up for their products.
You mean yeah, of course. I mean February 11th is going to be or 13th, whatever day it is that people get phones, is going to be an awesome day for Angry Birds.
And well, I mean, not just Angry Birds, which frankly I fucking had my fill of.
Yeah, no.
If I don't hear the words "angry" and "birds" again together in my life, I'll be totally fine with that.
Like me, you've gone pro pig.
I've just gone anti Angry Birds.
Well, I mean, you're pro pig.
I'm glad they've had all the success that they've had.
Right.
But enough already. I don't need to hear about the Angry Birds movie, the Angry Birds board game, Angry Birds, you know, on every fucking... I mean, it's obviously been an astonishing success.
Yes.
But enough already.
It's the Shrek of this decade.
The Angry Birds guys don't need it to sell anymore. There are many other games out there. Basically everything. All the Wordlands, you know, all the great stuff that's on iPhone right now is going to open up to a massive new market on February 10th. So that's great news for those developers.
So
that's all.
Mac App Store.
Do you like it?
Yeah, I mean, it's okay.
What's preventing you from being more enthusiastic about it?
Well, like basically the thing that's preventing me from being enthusiastic about it is I was doing something yesterday. I needed a utility and the first thing I did was went to the Mac App Store. And I was like, it was the kind of thing that should be there. It was like Espresso or some sort of text editor or something like that. A tool. Basically, I was looking for a tool to help me manage some stuff I was doing for the newsletter.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, we have a newsletter now.
I know. I got it.
Yeah. We'll talk about that in a sec. But yeah, I mean, it's not ubiquitous enough. They need to have more stuff in there. I was a little pissed that some Apple stuff that I would like to have bought, like Logic, the Pro version of GarageBand, you know, the next up version of GarageBand.
Yeah,
I was going to buy that because I was having some trouble doing some podcast stuff, and I was like, oh, it's only $70 or $80 or something like that. I'll totally check that out, and maybe I can just buy it from the App Store. But it's not there. Have a letdown.
Well, I mean, that's like that's a high-end piece of software. Isn't that something that you actually might prefer to buy in a box with a manual?
I don't ever want to buy a box again. I just want to have it always associated with
I agree.
So I can download it as much as I need it.
I think the issue with it not being particularly ubiquitous is just an issue with, you know, it being new. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I know. I haven't tried any of the games. It looks like a lot of the stuff that's out there are like ports of shitty iPhone games.
I didn't look closely enough to tell. How much of this is just existing apps that have been gathered?
A lot of it is
okay.
Existing apps.
It's not like people are now just building apps, because the Mac's a platform that's been around for a long time. They're not just now building apps so they can put them on the Mac
App Store. No. It's stuff like Evernote and Things and you know, Peggle. And there's a ton of apps that have been around for a long time and are already there.
But like the Twitter app and Angry Birds, which are the two that people are mostly talking about, that seems like that development was coincided with the launch of the App Store, doesn't it? Because I don't think they were around before.
Twitter was around for a long time because it used to be 8-bits Tweety.
Right, but the official version of it, so I had not seen
that. I think they've been
before.
Holding it and they waited until this was available or something. I mean, I don't know the story.
And the same with Angry Birds, right? Angry Birds wasn't on Mac prior to this.
No. I mean, I think what we're going to see is a lot of kind of bad ports of iPhone games, which is unfortunate. I mean, I don't know. I think it's a kind of wait and see thing. I don't know that this is necessary. I do think that this makes it much easier for people like my father to install applications. Because right now, if I tell it, say, hey, you need to install Chrome, then basically he goes to the Chrome page and downloads it and then can't find it. And it's like, well, I installed it.
Oh, yeah, that's great. That's a good idea. For newbies, it's great.
Yeah, I mean, this is a way to make OS X easier to get into, which is, I think, a good thing.
So let me ask you this. If you were a developer and you had like a cool game, let's say you had come up with Angry Birds.
Yeah, of course.
Of course. Like, yeah, I could totally have done that.
I piss excellence, Witta.
Let's say you came up with Angry Birds. Would you?
I don't know why you're surprised sounding about that.
What would you? Would you prefer to just put it on your own website and take your chances, or would you rather put it on the Mac App Store and get the extra exposure? But you got to get Apple their 30%,
their pound of flesh.
Yeah, I would do my own site for a limited time.
See how it goes.
Norm's going to play both sides.
2 weeks.
Norm wants to win.
Then I would give Steam an exclusive. Then I would put it on the Mac App Store.
Why would that be your strategy?
because you want to end up with at the Mac App Store because that's where you're going to get all your long tail exposure.
I think I would do three simultaneous releases and give a discount if they come straight to my site.
What's so Steam's cut?
30%, I think, is the typical cut. I mean, no, it's never public, but that's the assumption.
I wonder if Steam and the Mac App Store will be in competition in any way.
I mean, it seems like they clearly
are. They're in competition right
now. Yeah, Bejeweled 3 is available on Steam and on the Mac App Store. I mean, the thing is, I don't think the content providers give a shit. They just want to sell their stuff and with the smallest possible cut.
Right.
So. Either, I mean, but for, as a user, from user perspective, I'm going to feel a little conflicted because I like they both do the exact same thing. I can buy an app there no matter I own it, and wherever I install them, I log in, I get that down. I can download that app.
Yeah.
I don't want to have both the Mac App Store and Steam have copies of different games. I want one service to have all my games.
Well, I think the Mac App Store is a good thing overall. There are many, many different apps out there where, you know, it's obviously a huge ecosystem and, you know, many different apps that may or may not have ever heard about. But the Mac App Store is basically like an end cap in a store
and
a bunch of stuff can be put in front of me easily. And I go, oh, I may never have.
It's a new way to spend money.
Yeah.
I'm really – the thing I do like is the buy once – you know, kind of the buy once,
gotta
download, whatever.
Yeah.
I think that's a good model for software, especially for the kind of stuff that they're putting in the App Store. I think I'll probably continue buying games on Steam just because then they're cross-platform. But, you know, that's the big – like if I buy Bejeweled 3 on Steam, I get it for Mac and PC.
This is like the Kindle argument.
Right. I mean, it's everywhere. It's Kindle versus iBooks all over.
Right.
I'm going to go with the multi-platform one every single
time.
That's
a good idea, yeah.
Except for the Mac-only apps like Delicious Library, which I'll totally get from the App Store. I mean, why not?
Yeah, that's cool.
So there was some more news. AMD's CEO quit yesterday, or day before yesterday, I guess now, Monday.
Now, is this – could
or
this
quit
be,
or was fired, resigned. It's difficult to say.
Could
exactly
this be – I don't want to jump ahead here, but could this be related to this NVIDIA Intel megaton, which seems like it could be very bad news for AMD?
Well, so I don't think it has anything to do with that. I mean, I could.
Maybe he's like, oh, fuck me. We can't fight this.
Well,
I'm going home.
The speculation, Rob Enderle said that he felt like it was probably because AMD had consistently ignored the tablet/netbook market. And while they just came to market, you know, Fusion is just now coming to market, which is their integrated CPU, GPU. It's clearly a PC part, not a integrated, not a tab. It's not an ARM competitor. It's not going to compete on the tablet
So when
space.
We say quit, you think he may have been
– it seems like he was probably ousted by the
pressured
board.
Pressured out, yeah.
So, I mean, it's a little unfortunate because, I mean, AMD is in a really good spot because the Fusion stuff, I don't know how much you know about that, but it's basically, you remember how the Xbox 360 CPU and GPU are really tightly integrated? They have a lot of connection between the two, and as a result, they're getting a lot more performance out of those than a traditional PC would, where you have to go out across the PCI
right.
Express bus to get to the GPU. So their new Fusion architecture does exactly that.
Is this basically their Sandy Bridge?
Oh, yeah, it is their Sandy Bridge, and they've been talking about doing it for a long time. So it's a CPU and a relatively capable GPU in one socket. And if history is any judge, their GPU performance will be better than Intel's, while their CPU performance is worse.
Is this appropriate, though, for high-end gamers, or a high-end gamer still going to want a dedicated part for their graphics?
It's probably not for high-end gamers now. In the future, it's not out of the question that it will be.
But for mid-range PCs, it's all good.
The other thing that's interesting is we'll see real graphics in laptops that traditionally would not have had real graphics.
Oh, yeah, that's a great thing.
Sub 3 pound. It's entirely possible the next version of the MacBook Air will have a Fusion CPU, or APU they call it.
So they're actually more of a viable gaming machine.
Yeah, and then you can actually play real games on it. I mean, Sandy Bridge is the same way, but it's using Intel integrated graphics. We all know how they have been over the years. It's definitely better, but whether you're actually going to be able to do more than just watch HD video and stuff with it remains to be seen.
But I had read about this team up between NVIDIA and Intel, which sounded like it was very bad news for AMD.
Well, so yeah, that's a nice segue, by the way, Gary.
You did it again.
It's a defining characteristic of the podcast.
You must draw attention to the seamless
segue. Defining characteristic of the podcast. The Intel-NVIDIA thing is basically Intel and NVIDIA have been fighting each other for a long, long time now. Over the CPU cross-licensing patents. So Intel had some patents that NVIDIA wanted access to. NVIDIA had some patents that Intel wanted access to. This is a common thing in technology. Everybody has cross-licensing agreements with everybody else. But there was a big, big, giant fight that nobody would claim was actually a fight for the last few years between Intel and NVIDIA. And what basically happened was NVIDIA said, hey, we have a CPU cross-licensing agreement. We want to build chipsets for Conroe and newer chips. What Intel supposedly said, allegedly said, was that the cross-licensing agreement only went up as long as the memory controller wasn't actually integrated in the CPUs. As long as the memory controller was in the north bridge of the motherboard, then we had an agreement. The moment that Intel moved their memory controller into the CPU itself, Intel said that agreement was no longer valid and you don't have a cross-licensing agreement.
So I feel like the dog in Physics for Dogs right now.
The upshot is, remember NVIDIA used to make chipsets for Pentium 4 CPUs, mm-hmm. motherboards?
Mm-hmm. N-Force.
Oh, God, I remember that.
They were good. Well, the even-numbered ones were good. The odd-numbered ones were usually terrible. But what happened was when Intel moved to socket 1136 and whatever the 1176.
It was even before socket 1336.
No.
Well, I guess, yeah, so it was 775 to 1366.
Yeah, yeah.
Once it did, but you know, I don't think there were any enforce for late 775 stuff.
Yeah, there were.
For Penryn?
Yeah, Penryn had, you could put Penryn in some enforce.
No way.
They were biased up. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Basically, as soon as socket 1366 came out, NVIDIA stopped being able to make Intel chipsets because the memory controller, the thing that makes the system memory talk to the CPU was no longer in the north bridge of the chipset. It was in the CPU itself. Needless to say, NVIDIA was upset about this because at that point, chipsets were about a third of their business. So there have been some lawsuits and Intel fired some lawsuits back, yada, yada, yada. Nobody would ever admit that there was ever any kind of a conflict between the two giant ass companies. But then like Monday they said, hey, everything's cool now. Also, Intel paid NVIDIA $1.5 billion with a B dollars. A lot of money.
Over several years.
Over a period of time.
Intel paid NVIDIA?
Yes.
Okay. So NVIDIA won.
So that implies to me that in a Norman Chan world where somebody wins and somebody loses, NVIDIA was the winner and Intel was the loser. Yeah. Which seems, you know, knowing what I know about this, seems like it's probably the right outcome because Intel – seems like did some shady bullshit with their bus patents.
But this does also mean – doesn't this also mean that they're now in business together and there's some kind of integration going on?
This is
the settlement of a dispute.
Yeah. All that means is that Intel and NVIDIA won't sue each other over patent infringement.
Okay.
That Intel says, here's our patent portfolio that we're making available to you. NVIDIA says, here's our patent portfolio that we're making available to you.
Only when it's relevant to the industries that they're already in.
Right.
Non-competitive. So for future Sandy Bridge-like processors, Intel may use some NVIDIA GPU knowledge for the GPU component.
Right.
And NVIDIA, who's now moving into desktop CPUs, not x86, they've said they won't do x86. When they're making ARM processors, Project Denver, Tegra, they will use some of Intel's.
Oh, I thought I had read something about Intel was going to be shipping like hybrid chips with NVIDIA chipsets on them.
Well, with NVIDIA technology.
Yeah.
And maybe with NVIDIA chipsets. I mean, it's not entirely out of the question that NVIDIA will now be building chipsets again for NVIDIA for Intel CPUs, which wouldn't be a bad thing. I think that – I mean – NVIDIA basically pulled out of the chipset market about 3 months ago. So whether they spin that back up again remains to be seen.
It sucks because for the past generation since Nehalem, there has been no – if you wanted to build an Intel motherboard or Intel system, you had to use an Intel motherboard, Intel chipset motherboard.
Or an ATI – Intel chipset motherboard with an ATI Southbridge.
Right. Which weren't very good. No, more competition's better.
Yeah. That's it's a kind of a big story in the long term. Doesn't really mean much today or tomorrow.
Right.
And then the last thing this week, this was a lot of kind of businessy news this week, but Google has actually announced that they're pulling the H.264 codec from Chrome.
What does that mean?
This is a big deal.
It means
an HTML5 in future. Right now, using HTML5, you can embed video without using a Flash player. Without using like a third-party player.
Just like you can embed an image.
Right. Just like you don't image, use IMG tag. You can use a video tag and just dump the URL to the video between the tag and there will be a player and it'll play.
Right.
In the future, you can't put HD64 encoded video in that video tag to play with the HTML5 player.
So this sounds like bad news for Apple fans for some reason.
Well, Apple's made a pretty big bet on H.264 video on the web because that's how the iPad and iPhone and all that stuff views web video.
Yeah. So Google's reasoning for this is that they want to support open formats, and so they're just going to use web WebM video.
But HTML5 is an open format, isn't it?
No, it's not. It's free to license now, but it's still owned by
H.264.
H.264. It's owned by MPEG-LA.
Fraunhofer, right? Or MPEG-LA.
MPEG-LA. And even though they've said that it's going to be indefinitely free, it's still not a open free format.
What's the practical upshot of all this?
Practical upshot is that you're going to have to use Flash to watch H.264 video.
Or you'll install an extension to Chrome.
Or an extension. And the big controversy is that people are saying Google is they're just being hypocrites, because while they will not let you – while they claim to support open – only support open formats, and that's why they're taking away H.264 support, they have Flash built in to their player.
Okay. But so this is bad news browser. For owners of iDevices, it sounds like, which don't support Flash.
Well, iDevices don't use Chrome.
Yeah, it's only a Chrome browser.
Okay, Chrome only.
The thing is, at some point, it's entirely possible that iOS devices will support WebM video. The problem is none of the tools that you use to create video yet really support. Like, we have this giant compressor thing that lives on the cloud on Amazon EC2 that all of our videos go up to, and then it spits out like 8 different versions of the video for all the different resolutions and devices that we support.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that stuff supports WebM yet, and those files are – my understanding is a little bit bigger than a comparable H.264. So it's going to be actually expensive for us to support WebM native.
Hey, should I be able to view your videos on my iPhone?
Yeah,
absolutely.
It hasn't worked for me.
All right, you have to be logged in.
Yeah.
Okay, so once you do, it's really easy. You tap it.
And then the play button pops up.
Yeah, and then you tap it again.
I'm going
to
do it right now.
And if you tap it again, then it'll take you to the iPhone video player. So it doesn't actually play within the browser. It does full screen.
I'm gonna try and watch one of your videos right now and see what happens.
I think it'll play inside the player even.
No, it is full screen for me.
I think you have to hit. I only ever watch the videos on the iPad on our site, so I don't really know. But anyway, so I guess that's news for this week. Let's answer some reader questions. So our first question comes from someone named Dustin, who put that in his file that he sent to us.
Dustin, this is Dustin. I had a question regarding the future of PCs. It seems like with the current trend we're seeing with mobile devices that consumers do not want the options that PCs provide. They are content with having a device that limits choice but enhances the user experience. We can see this with iOS, Android, Windows Phone 7, and Chrome OS. To me, all these platforms operate as basically underpowered PCs with limited options. Even Android, which people consider to be open, is a joke compared to Windows on the PC, because carriers and the phone manufacturers have complete control over your experience. The only way to get away from this control is to root your phone, in which case your warranty is then useless. So with this current trend in place, do you guys see PCs eventually being replaced by closed platform devices that all run their own proprietary operating systems, which at this point seem to come down to iOS, Android, Windows Phone 7, maybe WebOS and Chrome OS? Or will an open hardware platform be established for mobile devices so we don't have to be limited by what the carriers and phone manufacturers give us? Thanks a lot, and I'm from Phoenix, Arizona. It gets pretty hot here, so that's about it. Thanks.
So I don't know that that's a foretold story that, you know, what's working on mobile doesn't necessarily work on PC and vice versa. I mean, I think we all know that that's what's working on – you know, we don't want tablets running Windows 7. I think that's – even Microsoft seems to be aware of that, given the direction they're taking the next version of Windows. I mean, do you think we're going to be living in a dystopian world controlled by the phone manufacturers, Norm?
No, absolutely not.
I think we already are.
Well, but I mean, do you think PCs are going to be moving in that direction as well?
Maybe I'm a little confused by the question. In what sense does he –
It was kind of a long question, in fairness.
Is he suggesting that desktop OSs will become more like phone OSs?
Yeah, I think he's suggesting that the fact that phones are growing at a pretty good rate is going to give the PC manufacturers ideas. And I don't think that – I mean, I think we have too much legacy there for that to be the case. I think that some people will willingly trade the freedom of a desktop OS for an easier to use, probably less powerful tablet type OS.
Well, I think what'll be a really interesting indicator is the next macOS Lion. There's been a lot of speculation about whether or not that'll be more iOS like.
Right. There's hints that it's going to be more appified. And the App Store, which we talked about earlier on this show, even kind of is a prelude to that. But I don't think that realistically that there's going to be I don't think there's going to be any kind of a title shift toward more closed systems, at least on desktop and notebook PCs. I think probably the way the phone manufacturers work, I think we're probably as open as we can likely expect to get as long as the telecom companies are in charge of phone OSs and phones. I mean, I don't think that Verizon or AT&T or any of those companies, Orange in the UK, Bell Canada in Canada,
Rogers
are going to allow open devices to connect to their platforms. It's just not the way those companies work.
Right.
Anybody else?
Unless everyone starts using the Chrome laptop.
How are you liking that Chrome laptop?
The trackpad is a giant piece of shit.
Mm-hmm. Trackpad and keyboard.
Yeah, you said you didn't like the keyboard. Right?
What do you not like about the keyboard?
I couldn't type as fast as I could with any other.
Was it the rubbery, keyboard. Spongy kind of feel?
Yeah, and also that the keys didn't depress hard enough. And
yeah.
It wasn't even a chiclet design thing that I have a problem with, but that keyboard in particular, I did not think was fast enough for me.
I didn't have any problem with the keyboard, but I'm not running at Chan speed.
No one can match Chan's APM.
It's really bad at Flash video. Flash video just doesn't work for the most part.
Why is that?
Probably a shitty Flash implementation on the Linux kernel that they're using. Mm. I'm sure that'll change. But, I mean, it's I do really like it as a distraction-free place to just sit down and write.
There is that.
I mean, it is – like, you know how you used to use OS X instead of Windows to do your writing because you didn't have games and shit there.
Right.
Well, now there are games and shit on OS X. And having a distraction-free place to just sit down where I don't have, you know, Plants vs. Zombies or Torchlight or something like that, kind of looking at my shoulders like, hey, Will.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I often employ the full screen mode, which, you know, blanks out everything else. So you've got kind of – you put blinkers on basically.
Yeah.
And this is like a version of that, I guess.
Well, have you looked at you use a specific screenwriter.
Well, when I'm writing just regular documents, I try to use a program called WriteRoom.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask.
Which gives
about.
You the old-fashioned kind of war games, you know, yeah. Green text on a black
leave me
background.
The fuck alone.
And knocks everything else off the screen. I mean, it really is just a black.
And do you like that?
I do. It does require a certain amount of self-discipline, but it is good. When I'm using the screenwriting software, then that is just a window. And isn't Lion adding the ability to maximize windows?
Yeah, full
windows?
Screen. You can finally maximize windows.
So that will be good for me.
I mean, you could always drag them and make them bigger.
You can, but you know, when you have to have the discipline to turn off email, turn off instant messenger,
That's
turn
true.
Off Twitter, turn off all the little things that can bing and bong and distract you.
Well, you know, this was a life hacker tip from way back, but a long, long time ago, I turned off all of the email notifications, all of the pop-up notifications for everything.
Yeah.
And I find that it makes me much, much more productive. The one thing I do wish – one thing you might want to try is using spaces for that. Cause sometimes I'll do that. Like I'll use a separate space.
Oh, just go into a different
for
space.
The word processor.
Yeah.
And use the rest of there's like a fucking around space and then there's a serious business space.
That's a good idea. Fun space and workspace.
Yeah. I mean, I like to keep the party in the front and the work in the back.
Speaking of, on an unrelated or semi-related note, we're talking about distractions. I was linked – I can't remember who sent me this, but I saw it on Twitter. It was a Wall Street Journal article about people being addicted to their screens.
Oh.
And how families just sit around at dinner now just staring at their individual screens.
I thought this was going to be the Chinese mom article.
No, what's that?
Did you not read that?
I think I heard something about
it. Fake outtakes.
Okay, so we've all seen it. You know, the Windows Phone 7 campaign was built around it. The idea of people just, you know, zombified staring at their screens and not really
have
people
juice.
Around them.
Give
basically.
Me the juice, man.
And,
give me the juice.
And it was talking about families that are establishing rules like no cell phones at the dinner table. And
I think that's perfectly reasonable.
I think it's completely reasonable.
Yeah, like children are men. That kid was just like playing with his one-handed.
That's
game,
right.
Game
they, had a, yeah. they had a vacation where they weren't allowed to check any of the screens for a whole week, which seems a bit excessive.
Oh, God, it's torture.
That is too much. I'd be climbing the
inhumane.
Walls. But there was a checklist. It was like, is this you? Are you someone who's addicted? Answer these 10 easy. Have you
gone to the bathroom without an iPad or phone in the last 2 years?
If you answer to three or more of these, you may be addicted. I responded yes to all 10.
Oh, that's a win. Well, fist bump.
You're too far across the table.
Oh, virtual fist bump.
Psychology book, right? The DS whatever handbook.
DSEM.
There's a
DSM.
DSM 4 or something.
Yeah.
It's
five now.
It's signs of addiction.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. You can make that work for anything.
And it was things like, have you used your iPhone or your iPad on the toilet? Yes.
Well, it's my fucking e-reader.
That's what it's fucking. That's what it was built for.
Right.
It was
designed for toilet browsing.
It was built for computing
on the
shitter.
People in the lap.
Absolutely.
And the only difference is that they're wearing pants in the ads.
Yes.
Okay. So So I think we didn't answer that guy's question at all, but we made an attempt, which is what really matters.
We tried.
Yes. I'm going to play another question here. This one came from an iPhone voice recorder, so who knows how good it is.
Hey, Tested Podcast crew. This is Mike from Maryland, driving to Denver for Christmas break again. I must say I was quite surprised you actually put my last response on the podcast. As listening to it myself on the podcast, I can tell I was quite out of it after driving 25 hours with kids and everybody in the car. That was a pretty pathetic non-question response to the Volt. But anyway, as I am now driving back to Maryland from Denver on another 30-hour trip, I was listening to the talk about CES and some of the tablet talk, and I did have a question on how you guys or what your opinion is on the other companies producing tablets. As Apple and the juggernaut it is, no wonder it has $50 billion in cash laying around, because they could give those iPads away for free and still be making tons of money on their content with iTunes and all the apps and everything. Whereas these other companies don't have the music store or the movie store or any of the other income streams that Apple has. And whereas you do have some nifty products like Vizio, which I think is the most compelling tablet out there because it actually connects your TV, and one of the most popular things I hear people using an iPad for, and I as myself use one, is sitting on my couch in front of my TV. And to have Vizio come out and have one that specifically panders to that function seems to be the most compelling tablet out there compared to the iPad. But anyway, I guess the overall question would be, do you think there will ever be a contender to the iPad? And obviously, if Apple keeps innovating and coming out with better and better ones, it seems that they're just so far ahead that everyone else is just wasting their money or trying to jump in to the deep end without really knowing how to swim. Anyway, love the podcast. Keep it up. I need to get back to driving across this country.
this great country.
Yes, fantastic.
What's with that guy's lack of patriotism?
America, fuck yeah.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, Apple has a tendency to come into a market, completely change the whole thing up. And then, you know, over the next 4 or 5 years, people spend time catching up. But usually by the time they catch up, the market's gone and something else has come up in its place. The iPod is the perfect example of that, right? MP3 players existed for years before the iPod. Then whammo, iPod came out and suddenly everybody was like 3 years behind. They finally caught up and then they moved to flash-based iPods, you know, with the Nano and that kind of stuff. And that changed things all over again.
Yep.
Because up until that point, it was like, well, there's no way you can make a flash. That's crazy. It'd be way too expensive. And Apple looked at where the price of flash was going over the next 2 years. They looked at that kind of curve and they said, oh, hey, it's too expensive right now. We're gonna have some crazy expensive products for the next year and a half. But then all of a sudden, 3 years down the line, they're going to be commodity products. And that's exactly what happened. I think we can expect the same thing will happen with tablets. And by the time everybody else catches up to them on tablets, either that product will have changed dramatically from what it is now, or, you know, moved on to eyeglass computers or something equally bananas.
Now, we have talked many times on the podcast before about how, you know, Apple is running away with this market and other companies have been slow to respond. What's the point he made that I hadn't really considered much before but is interesting is that even if other companies do, let's say the Motorola Zoom or whatever, other companies do come to success with their Android-based tablets,
mm-hmm.
Apple is still the only company that is really making money on both hardware and content. They're selling you the iPad, and then they're selling you this. They make a little bit off of everything they sell you through the App Store.
Well,
whereas, you know, even the Motorola is relying on the Android Store, and it's Google's making the money there.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think that we're – well, first off, there's no reason that Motorola couldn't make a Motorola App Store other than that no one would use it.
How do you think that's going to go? Yeah, exactly.
Thumbs down.
Right.
The thing is, I don't think that – I mean, Apple does make money on that stuff, and it's definitely a kind of peachy side source of income, but it's by no means compares to the amount of money they make on the hardware, I don't think. I'd have to look at financials to see. But that's my guess.
Yeah, I think he may be exaggerating when he's talking about giving iPads away and still making a profit. That might be pushing it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like a console situation where they sell the first, you know, because even the consoles, even the game consoles like the PS3 and the Xbox, where they sell the initial consoles at a loss and then expect to make it up on hardware over on the game royalties.
Yeah.
Over a period of time, it's not. It's even that over the life five to 10 year lifespan of a console. You know, now when Microsoft sells an Xbox, they're making money on it. You know, over as Moore's Law takes effect and they can make fewer and fewer chips do the same amount of work, and the hardware gets smaller and uses less energy and is easier to produce, then economies of scale also ramp up and they end up making money on the hardware over time.
Yeah, I mean,
even though they're selling it cheaper,
the economics of it are different. They can sell they can afford to sell you a console at a loss, because ultimately the only way to keep that console usable is to keep buying software for it, whereas whether you can choose to buy apps for your phone, but you can just use it as a phone.
Yeah, I mean,
keep putting money into it to make it work.
I mean, you look at my father's iPhone and it has one app on it, and that right. app is Pandora probably or something right. like that. I have an audio question from Alex, who's 15, lives in the UK. Alex says, "Dear Gary, Norm, Will, plus any guests, in the episode just before Christmas, you all had a discussion about Americans attempting the British accent, where Gary gave a brief example using the word party, as I recall. I haven't been a listener very long, but I love the podcast, by the way. So I'm sorry if this has been raised before, but to the ears of my friends and I, we're all British, by the way, Gary sounds distinctly Australian! Exclamation point, question mark. I would have sent an audio message to give a comparison, but as this is my first contact to any podcast, I decided against it. Thanks for answering, Alex." He called you a criminal.
Yeah, I'm not happy about that.
No. Wow. No.
I mean, you know, I try not to take offense. The reality is I do hear that a lot. I hear a lot of people ask me if I'm Australian.
Okay.
Americans do often confuse the two accents, but I think more so in my case, because look, the reality is that I've lived in the United States now for the majority of my adult life. I've lived here for 15 years.
You're an immigrant.
And I'm a citizen.
Okay.
You got rights.
I do.
You can vote. You can carry guns.
I can do all kinds of shit.
Can't be president.
Can't be president. No, not yet. I could be the governor.
You could be the senator.
I could be the governor of California.
Yep.
But they could still change that. I think that rule is nonsense. I think that
American dream.
I don't think you should have to be born in America to be the president.
Well, say that, of course.
Right.
Well, yes, because I have real presidential aspirations.
That's to prevent sleeper cells, the Russians from sending in, or the Chinese, or, you know, anybody who's against us.
Like a Manchurian candidate.
Sending in a Manchurian candidate. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, we're getting into touch.
Well, I mean, I think if they were putting, that much effort into it, they could probably forge a birth certificate, don't you?
Uh-oh. Well, no. This is a trap. I'm going to ask another question real quick before we get too far in. So yes, just to be clear, you are not, nor have you ever been an Australian.
No, but having lived here for 15 years has put like a weird twang on my accent, which means it's weird, and you know, it is what it is. When I go back home to England, my regular accent comes back.
Mike from Mulvane, Kansas says, "Earlier this year, iPhones experienced an issue where non-recurring alarms didn't go off for some reason until the issue resolved itself a few days later. My question is pretty simple. How in the hell does this happen? From a strictly layman's perspective, it seems like it should be a pretty simple function. If alarm time equals X and current time equals X, then sound alarm. But apparently this is not the case. Additionally, there was very little response from Apple on the issue, which seems incredibly stupid to me. If they require all of their phones to be attached to an iTunes account, why not send an email to those owners so they're aware of the half-assed workaround, rather than let them be late for work, school, etc., and lose their established goodwill? Thanks, Mike from Mulvane, Kansas, birthplace of the Patriot Guard Riders. There's your fun fact."
I agree that Apple should have sent an email. They should have done a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people were late to work.
A lot of people were late to work.
Some lady missed her like fertility pills.
Oh no!
Schedule.
And I'm sure I'm sure the programming issue is more complicated than if alarm time equals X, then sound the alarm. But you know, it's a weird bug. But I don't understand
how X equals alarm time and Y equals current time when X equals Y. Ring.
You know what could be worse? You could have had a Zune, and then your whole fucking device would have been bricked.
Really?
Remember? Don't you remember that?
Oh yeah,
there was a calendar issue where I can't remember what date. I think it may have been January 1st or
no,
February.
No, it was a leap year.
It was the leap year bricked the device.
It didn't work on February 29th.
Yeah, you basically had to wait for it to come back. It was dead for that whole day.
Yeah, no music.
So these weird clock bugs happen all the time. I agree that Apple probably should have an email, given that they were aware of it ahead of time. because I remember reading coverage of it before.
Why doesn't Apple care?
Was that a joke?
No.
Oh, it was an Apple care joke.
Oh. Yes, yes, it was a joke. And on that note, if you have a question, we answer them occasionally, it seems like. Send it to podcast@tested.com. We like audio questions best. You can record it with the voice recorder on your phone. That sounded okay.
Yeah, for the iPhone voice recorder, that wasn't bad.
Keep it under a minute. Send it in under 10 megabyte total file size, please. And yeah, we answer audio questions first. So unless you have a really, really funny or awesome text question, you want to get it answered.
I'll give you a tip too. I bet you that if you plug in your earbuds that have the microphone into them, you'll probably get better quality voice than if you're just talking into the microphone at the bottom of
Gary
the phone.
Gary Widow with the pro tip.
There you go, pro tip.
Okay, so podcast@tested.com. Send them in. And that's going to do it for us this week. It's first back from CES show. I guess this is our first official show of the year.
First regular show of the year.
Yeah, we did four last week. I feel like we talked a lot.
I think it's because we did.
Four shows.
There was a lot of talking.
Yeah, a lot of
Looking back at some of those podcasts, those live shows, they were pretty erratic.
A little loose.
Yeah.
A little loose.
You missed the first day, too.
Yeah, the first day, Norm and I were both a little drunk.
You guys must have been burned out. And
we were tired. We started at like midnight, right? We started real late.
Yeah, I didn't see that first
one. And it went until 2 a.m. or something bananas like that.
And then you guys were fried. I don't remember the other nights.
And then the infamous, now infamous, Kristen Salvatore episode.
Was that episode two?
Some people were saying she's our Lee Alexander, but I don't think that's the case.
Kristen. Was this something that happened with Lee Alexander on the Giant Bomb where she was drunk and annoying or something?
Yeah, so she came onto the Giant Bombcast 1 year and got really drunk and people were mean to her because she was a boring guest. And then she did the same thing the next year but got drunk and was pissed off because she thought it was a sexism thing from the Giant Bomb audience. And that made it even worse. So,
I see. It couldn't be that she was just boring.
The problem was that she was really drunk and kind of unintelligible, not even boring.
Well, that never helps.
Yeah, being unintelligible, not so good. But the last two shows, I think, were among the best podcasts we've done, given the kind of strange circumstances.
They were good fun. Yeah.
But anyway, we'll be back next week for Norman Chan, Gary Whitta, and myself. Hang out for Fake Outtakes after the closing music.
Hi there, I didn't see you.
Tested.
So, Norman, have you ever been to a sleepover?
I've never been to a sleepover.
Do you play an instrument?
I play two instruments.
Which ones?
Violin and piano.
It's interesting. Did you play video games or watch TV growing up?
Not much. Not much at all.
So I read this intriguing article the other day in the Wall Street Journal about Chinese mothers.
Well, that's racist.
Yes, it is.
That's racist.
Yes, it is. The article is titled "Why Chinese Mothers Are Superior."
And it was written by a Chinese mother.
It was written by a Chinese mother.
This lady has a book out.
Yes,
and I think she was a daughter of immigrants.
Okay,
so she's first generation.
Yeah,
and she raised her kids as a traditional Chinese mother. Oh, what the label she calls it. It really means like.
Means she was a hard ass.
Hard ass, you know, non-Western style.
Does your mom listen to this podcast?
Mother. No. Not okay. At all. She doesn't know what the computer is. So.
That's racist.
Is this. Now, are we talking here about the stereotypical.
Well, the premise
the archetype of the book. Of the demanding Asian parent
well,
who
nothing
is ever
the premise of the book.
Enough.
And she leads off with many people ask or are curious why Chinese kids or Asian kids are so perfect. Why do they all have great. Grades
great
and
academic
great academics and
yep.
They all go to great schools and can play multiple instruments. It's because of the Chinese mother.
This is the Norman Chan origin story.
It's because of the Chinese
right
mother.
Now.
The Chinese mother teaches a child only through shame and belittlement.
Well, were you
never through encouragement?
Were you a model child? Were you academically strong?
I was academically competent.
Okay.
But
how many bees did you get through your
many
grade
many
school?
Of bees and worse, but from the way that this lady tells it, the traditional Chinese mother, an A- is unacceptable. While Western parents, an A- deserves a pat on the back.
I've even seen one of these kaleidoscope memes of the demanding Asian dad, where nothing is ever satisfactory.
Now this Western stereotype. My parents were completely grade agnostic. They were like, you get what grades you want.
Yeah, that's what I had.
Get what grades you want. Oh my god!
As long as you tried.
No wonder you guys are such fuckholes.
Right. And the thing is, I got all A's because I went to a public school. It was pretty easy. I didn't have to really work that hard.
If the standard was lower, then sure.
Well, I grew up in a town of 40,000 people. We didn't have multiple choices. We had the school I went to or the Catholic school, which stopped after mm-hmm. seventh grade.
Was this like a barnyard school? Like
the, yeah, we had a sheep.
Sliding board.
There was a how to milk sheep section.
Like a little house on the prairie fucking, type school?
Not a school, Marm. We didn't have a coal burning stove in the front.
Was it a schoolhouse? As opposed to a school.
My school.
The headmaster and the one big room.
Yeah, the one with the pews.
This is supposed to be about Norman. The high school I went to looked like the one from Leave It to Beaver. It had like big white columns in front and it was all brick and, you know, it was also the municipal gymnasium.
Okay.
So going back to this Wall Street Journal guest column, this lady was talking about how in the household of the Chinese mother, the Chinese child must play two instruments, must play piano and violin.
And no other instruments were acceptable.
No other instruments were acceptable because they weren't classy enough.
They are the classy instruments.
And you must practice
like bowed instruments like the cello and the oboe. Yeah.
No, that's second tier. There is only one first violin.
Yo-Yo Ma.
How do you explain Yo-Yo Ma?
Yeah, Yo-Yo Ma is a cellist.
I bet he was a reject.
Wow. And, wow.
There's a Norm meme for you. Yo-Yo Ma, I bet he was a reject.
And you must practice 3 hours a day. The first hour is only
the
warm-up. That's
the easy one.
Yeah, that's the easy one. It's the second and third hour that gets you.
Do you think that Yo-Yo Ma has the kind of the ultimate demanding Asian mother who even like at his concerts at like Carnegie Hall is at the back going, why couldn't you have learned the violin?
Even though you are the preeminent cellist
in the world.
If you were the greatest,
you could have been the greatest violinist.
Mediocre violin,
yeah.
Better than greatest cellist.
Yeah.
Wow. So what else, Norm? Give us some more.
I don't remember. I skimmed over the article. What did the article say?
I only read the first like three paragraphs. I thought it was kind of racist.
Yeah, she was on The View and got into an argument with one of the ladies on The View about it.
Which one?
I don't remember. I don't watch The View.
All of them, I would imagine.
Right. The Republican or the – anyway, it doesn't matter.
I'm glad I didn't have that kind of strict upbringing.
Yeah, what was your upbringing like, Gary?
Mine was like – it sounds a bit like yours, like pretty loose. Like my parents were like – I never got grief over my grades or anything. My grades were always decent, but I never got grief when I got a C or something.
If I was skipping chores to do homework, like sometimes I'd be like, I have a book report due. I can't mow 10 acres of field today.
Yeah.
I would get yelled at for that.
Right.
Well, chores are chores. But in the article, I think they also talked about how – these parents, they grow up and they expect the kids will be thankful in the end. That they say, you know, you'll thank me later, and no kid ever thanks their parents.
But it just seems just as likely.
I think my parent actually.
That kids are more likely to rebel against that kind of authoritarian regime, aren't they?
Right. I mean, how many?
Then it's a battle of wills.
Yeah, mom always wins, right?
Well, yeah, kids never win that battle.
So, anything else going on?
Hey, you know, they also announced one thing last week at CES and we didn't talk about.
That's Robo Dildo thing?
No, not the Robo Dildo.
Oh.
It's Star Wars on Blu-ray.
Oh, man.
Lord Vader was in attendance at the Panasonic booth.
Hey, was it really Peter, what's his name? Mayhew?
Yeah, I don't think it would have been Peter.
Peter Mayhew's Chewbacca.
Would have been Dave Prowse.
He's
getting old. He's too old.
He's like 90 years old.
He's also not allowed to be. He's not allowed to be involved in any Star Wars events anymore. I think.
Really? He got banned for life.
I think there was a bit of falling. I feel bad for Dave Prowse. You know, all through the filming, he thought it was going to be his voice in the movie. Oof. He didn't know that he was going to get dubbed over by James Earl Jones.
He got Oompa Loompa'd too.
Yeah, basically.
So, which version have you guys bought, or are you guys getting?
I will be buying the original trilogy. I won't be buying anything else.
Okay, so here's my thing. I pre-ordered the full thing.
Because you want the special features.
I want the special features.
$90 is the pre-order price.
I thought it was going to be $130, so I'm like, fuck yeah, $90. Well,
$140 is MSRP.
Right.
$90 for – basically you're paying $10 a disc, $10 for each movie plus three. It's nine discs.
The thing is, there's some awesome, awesome, awesome documentaries about the first three movies, and the only ones that ended up on that box set were the one about A New Hope. So I want to see the Irving Kirshner interviews about Empire Strikes Back. Went from the moment that he realized that those movies were more about selling toys than about making awesome movies.
Right.
And Gary, you will not have none of it.
I'm not going to get drawn back into another rant. I'm going to stay calm, but I despise the prequels.
What is bad about them exactly?
I despise the changes that were made to the special editions. I think they made the movies demonstrably worse.
But the special editions is what you're
getting. I feel like I've been robbed of the movies of my childhood. Because it's not like, you know, when they make like a bad, you know, Raymond Chandler said, you know, what do you think, what if they make a bad movie, they ruin your book.
Right.
And he says, he never ruins my book. The book is on the shelf right there. But the book, in the case of Star Wars, the book isn't on the shelf anymore. So, Lucas took that book away and replaced it with a shittier book.
So, like, the Greedo shooting first thing is definitely bullshit. We all agree
Greedo
about that.
Should shoot first.
No.
Han shoots first. Han shoots first.
Right.
That's correct.
Han is in the real world. Han shoots first,
and it doesn't even look good.
No. It's like
it looks like a bad.
Well,
effect.
A what kind of fucking idiot could miss from that range? You know, Han Solo should have had a. Greedo really shot first, he should have had a hole through his gut like the one
The whole point of it was it established a character point of Han that he was a bad guy and he was ruthless. And it took all that away.
You don't know any good friendly smugglers.
And then
they donate to their church.
Then they throw in a Jabba the Hutt scene afterwards, which is completely pointless because all it does is repeat everything we've seen in the previous scene, which is Jabba wants his money.
All it does is introduce Jabba as a character waiting for a callback two movies later.
Yes.
Yeah.
But of course the whole fun
of
it.
And he doesn't look right either.
But of course the whole fun of it was all through the first two movies, we've heard about Jabba the Hutt. And in the third movie, it's exciting that we get to finally see what he looks like, and he's nothing like what we expect. In the new version of the trilogy, we see him right away, and all the mystique is gone.
So, well, and then there's the Yoda problem, which we've established. We talked about it a little bit on the live show.
Of course.
You ruined the one of the greatest reveals in cinematic
history. I feel terrible about that.
For your girlfriend.
Yeah.
You know, you could give her like some sort of pill that'll erase her memory.
Somebody tweeted me that actually the optimal way to watch the movies is 4-5-1-2-3-6, but I don't agree with that.
So you would
watch Star Wars, Empire, then the three prequels, and then Return of the Jedi.
So after Empire, on the downer, you get the flashback, the extended reveal.
Extended flashback, and then...
That's actually not a bad point. I kind of like that.
But then
it ruins the Leia reveal in Return.
I maintain that
the
optimal viewing order is 4-5-6.
4-5-6. 1-2... Oh.
No, just 4-5-6.
So, and then of course there's the yub yub bit at the end of Return of the Jedi.
I hate that they took that out.
I love that song.
I loved that song.
I mean, it was the only good part about the Ewoks.
And of course, they also added that awful, awful musical number into Jabba's Palace.
Oh, yeah. With the singing girl and then.
Yeah.
The CG band.
Oh.
Well, oh. And the mouth on the Sarlacc, the beak.
Yes.
That's
the only thing they added that I like was that little kind of touch on the chin that Boba Fett gives to the dancing girl. He gives her a little – that gives him a little bit of personality. They added that one extra shot.
He's like, oh, I like the Twi'lek dancer?
But almost without exception, everything they added to the films either adds nothing of value or actually makes it worse.
So then let's get into the – because we talked about this a little bit in the live show in CES. But what is it you don't like about the prequels again?
I mean, how long do you have? How many gigabytes?
I've got a couple
in order.
30 gigs of hard drive.
In order from the
worst. The first one, the kid, Jake Lloyd, clearly
I don't
awful.
Like anything about them. I don't know that I could have done better or anyone really could. I mean, sure, some people could have done a much better job of telling that origin story.
Right.
But I didn't like the kid in either of his incarnations. He's either Jake Lloyd or Hayden Christensen.
Okay.
I felt that the main story.
This is very calm compared to how you.
I'm not going to get drawn into one of those rants. We're going to do this rationally. I know that's what you want, but I'm not going
to
be.
I'm going to keep trying to bait you.
You can keep poking me with a stick.
Yeah.
The whole story arc of how Anakin is drawn to the dark side, I felt was very weak.
Well, and the removal of the mysticism from the Jedi Order, I think, is weak sauce.
The midichlorians. When I first heard that. I just couldn't believe what was happening.
And I mean, what about the fact that Chewbacca in the prequels is Jar Jar Binks?
Basically.
I mean, the native guide.
But Chewbacca was a great character.
No, I know.
And Jar Jar Binks is just clowning around for the kids. He's just a slapstick fool. And brings on – and, of course, let's not forget, he's actually the guy that dooms the entire galaxy.
That's right. He's
the guy who, as the replacement senator, gets
that's
up and
true.
Say, Misa propose that we hand all emergency powers over to Mr. Palpatine. And basically Jar Jar
the
is the whole –
the Enner.
The Jar Jar basically creates the Empire.
Hmm.
That's how fucked up that character is.
Well, but I mean, Sam Jackson at least is in those movies.
This party's over. One of the only good lines in the movie.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's when he comes in with the swords and then gets killed.
And he's the only one with a purple lightsaber.
Well,
by special request.
Because he's so awesome.
Sam Jackson.
But the whole, oh, I'm in love with you, and the emperor kind of tells him this bullshit story. And it's just, if you look at it from a character point of view, it's just not believable the way that the emperor turns him against everyone. It just, from a character point of view, none of it rings true. So that's a problem for me.
But you mean you don't think that Hayden Christensen is so fucking stupid that he would realize that turning to the dark side isn't actually going to bring the woman that he supposedly loves back to life?
Right. And when he says, again, one of the infamously worst lines in the movie, from my point of view, the Jedi are evil. There's no foundation for that line. That doesn't mean anything. The Jedi have never actually done anything evil.
Well, now, Gordon Ung has been arguing that for years, that the Alliance is actually the evil thing and the Empire are the good guys.
But he would argue that, wouldn't he? Because he's such a fucking contrarian.
Well, I mean, true. But I'm not going to try to repeat his argument because I'll fuck it up for sure. But, you know, the Empire, you know, they're just trying to keep an iron grip on the galaxy, freeing them from this thousand-year oppression of the Jedi Order.
Well, and actually, again, there's never, aside from, like, hunting down, they to be fair to Gordon's argument, they don't seem to have any problem with anyone other than the Rebel Alliance, who are the terrorists.
They're not oppressing anyone, right?
They're not,
blow up some planets.
Well, yes.
They blow up Alderaan.
That's true. They do destroy an entire planet. Okay. So Gordon's argument is nonsense.
Well, unless Alderaan was a hotbed of terrorist activity.
Peaceful planet.
No, they actually just did it for jollies, right? They blew it up because they
just wanted to get a rise out of Princess Leia.
Yeah, and to test the station's weapons.
Right.
That's pretty
fully
fucked
operational.
Up.
Yeah.
That's pretty fucked up.
That's true.
So, you know, all of these problems and more are the reasons why I don't like the sequels. And they just don't have any of the magic or the emotional resonance that the first films had.
There were some high points.
They don't have memorable characters.
Well, the Darth Maul, Qui-Gon, Ewan McGregor fight at the end of the first movie is pretty good.
But Darth Maul is not a character. Darth Maul is just a force of nature. He doesn't have any personality of his own.
No country for old Jedi.
It's true.
Yeah, give me like a Sith version of Chigger. I'd watch that fucking movie.
the space battle at the beginning of episode 3.
That was an attempt to top the space battle at the end of Return of the Jedi, which to my mind remains the greatest space battle in the history of cinema.
You know what the problem with the prequels was? The original movies had hillbillies. You know, those fighter pilots were all like backworlds. They all had funny accents.
Exactly.
Like that
Porkins.
Porkins was fat. There wasn't a fat person in the first movie.
Right.
In the prequels.
Stay on target.
Right. Well, and then A-Wing who augured into the Star Destroyer and brought it down.
Yeah.
That guy was a hillbilly.
Yeah.
He was just a good old boy. He was just trying to do something good for the people. He was Dick Winters.
Wedge kind of seemed like he might have come from money, don't you think?
No, Wedge was there for the ladies. He's from Tatooine. He was just looking for a way off of that rock.
No, that was Biggs was from Tatooine.
Oh, right. Wedge always
looked to me a little bit like he came from a rich family, like a military.
He could have been.
Family.
I mean, maybe he's doing it for the right reasons.
No, Biggs was.
Biggs had a mustache.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was definitely working class.
Right. Right.
Or like, military.
Yeah.
Again, from a military family.
I don't know, man. I want the 3 extra discs.
But isn't it amazing how in the new versions, Yoda looks worse than he did when he was just a Muppet?
Mm-hmm.
He never looked better than in The Empire Strikes Back. That little puppet had so much character, and his eyes were alive, and it felt like a living, breathing character.
Yeah, the way he
moved.
Then
the puppet version for episode 1 and the subsequent CGI versions.
Yeah.
For all the animation, I mean, for all the terrible things about the prequels, they did do some cool things.
The Yoda fight
when you
was
finally
awesome.
See Yoda fight, you think, okay, that's fucking. They actually
finally.
Made that look good.
Yeah.
Like
they didn't fuck it up. Even
you're wondering
like
how is this little
2-foot
gremlin going to fight Christopher Lee, and he does it.
Right,
and it's
convincing,
and it looks great.
Yeah.
But aside from, and you know, and the fight with the Emperor is not that bad either.
Well, the fight with the Emperor, like I kind of like
when he just wipes out his Imperial guards, you know, with like a wave of his hand.
Well, and the only part of the prequels that really evoked emotion in me other than rage was the bit at the end. Because you know, you go into that fight with Yoda and you know that the Emperor is going to win, right?
Well, I always thought that fight, they basically kind of fight to a draw. I've kind of felt that there was never a conclusive
winner.
Well, but
the thing is, if Yoda felt like he could have beaten the Emperor, he would have pushed on.
Right.
And by him backing down, you know, the claws scraping as he gets ready to drop is a heartbreaking moment.
Because
it's the moment that Yoda knows he's failed.
Right.
You know, that's his biggest failure.
Right.
is Hayden Christensen in the Rise of the Emperor.
Yeah.
And that's one of the only true moments in the movies. I think if you take out the bullshit romance and Jar Jar.
You mean the second movie?
The romance sequences. I mean, there's a reason why the second movie is by far the weakest of all three.
Well, hold on. It is
by far the weakest.
I don't think it's worse than the first one.
I think it's close, but I think the second one
isn't the second movie where he goes and wipes out the sand people.
Yes,
or is that the third one?
That's the second one.
Yeah, I mean that.
No,
it's the third one. It's the beginning of the third.
It is the third one.
All right,
because that's what pushes him down the path.
Yeah,
the second one has the
second one is the arena, and like it's hard to even remember what the fuck happens in that movie. It's Jango Fett.
Any of them?
It's Obi-Wan goes to the water planet and deals with the weird aliens. Fights Jango Fett Connors on the platform. Slave One fights him through
and then he chases them to Genosha.
All that platform game nonsense with R2 and 3PO going through the industrial pressing machines.
That's one of the worst things about modern, like post video. Of all the bad things that you can accuse video games of doing, the fact that every video game intended for kids now has a platforming sequence so they can put it in the fucking video game.
Of course.
It just infuriates me.
Yeah.
You know, look at Toy Story 2. There's the bit where they're crossing the street under the cones. That is there purely for the movie tie-in game.
We saw this in Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull as well. That there is something about this new era of digital effects that just don't have the same weight or magic or impact that practical effects did. Like,
why?
Well, the battle, the arena battle. It's the same thing that happened in the early Harry Potter movies. They fixed it in the later ones. But when in the first Harry Potter movie, when they're fighting the troll,
mm-hmm.
and they're flopping around, and it's like the worst ragdoll you've ever seen.
Oh, terrible! They do look like ragdolls,
right? All of those are bad.
Well, it's all those movies are framed in terms of the boss mini boss level structure. It's you have to have fight here, here, move on.
I'm just talking about the actual quality of the terrible animation. Yeah. Instead of doing something that looks like a real person would doing, it looks like it's a fucking doll with joints and no bones.
You see it in episode 2 when 3PO is comically being pulled along by those machines. He's flapping around and the ragdoll physics are awful.
And when Obi-Wan and Anakin are on top of the monsters in the arena.
All that business with 3PO's head getting put on the body of one of the droids.
I thought that was a nice callback to the Empire Strikes Back.
But
it's just this juvenile slapstick comedy.
Well, the dumb robots were the beginning of the end.
Yeah.
Right? Because the robots being essentially dick and fart jokes, the robot army,
right?
I mean, that was this is an old.
Well, there's a lot of hate to let flow through us.
So you're saying you have to
let the hate flow through you.
So here, the question is, why would you even buy this set at all, Gary?
Even the prequel, even the original movies.
I mean, I'm honestly torn on it. I so dearly wish that they would remaster the original.
You know they'll do it eventually.
They won't. I think Lucas has fairly categorically said that he doesn't. I think he owned those.
The problem is, I think the masters are no good.
No way.
But they could clean them up.
Clean them up. I think
you cannot tell me that it's beyond fucking Lucasfilm to clean up the originals and restore them the way they were originally in theaters.
Just around the corner.
This 9-disc set does not feel like the ultimate set. For one, there is no word ultimate in front of the label set. If they're not going to call it the ultimate final set,
they're going to be dipping into this for years to come.
I'm going to cancel my order at the last minute.
They're not doing them individually, are they?
No.
Because I consider it a small mercy that The Empire Strikes Back, which is the best of all the movies, is the one that was messed with the least. They didn't really do anything.
Jango Fett voice.
I don't like the Jango Fett voice. Well, I mean, Boba Fett voice, but, you know, it's...
Well, it's the guy who played Jango Fett.
Not Boba Fett. I don't like that voice. I don't like the Wampa changes.
Wampa changes?
They added in more scenes of the Wampa, so that it wasn't, you know, as unseen. It wasn't just this kind of scary thing in the cave. You got a good look at it.
Well, that's bad.
Yeah, I didn't like that.
The original story is that they shot those scenes at the last minute. They did the Wampa thing at the very end when they were making the movie.
Well, because they needed him to be hurt.
Well, no, because... Yes, and also I think the original Wampa design was ass.
Right. Well, no, but I think they did the Wampa to account for the car wreck, right?
But basically, all you see is after he gets away, after he finally manages to pull the lightsaber, gets free of the ice.
You get a flash.
You see the Wampa gonna going, like a full shot of him, like with his arm chopped off or something.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And then they added some CG shots of Bespin.
It's telling how little I've watched those prequels. I mean, the remakes, the redos of the original
trilogy.
They're
on Spike TV, like every other
I bought two versions of the DVD. I bought it once, and I bought the one again that has the non-anamorphic.
Honestly, he can keep changing them as much as he wants, as long as he just makes the original ones, keeps those available, then I don't care what he does. But I don't
If he did that, nobody would buy the new ones. So he's not going to do that.
Well, if you look on Amazon and you click on the page for the 9-disc set, and you look at, you know, how many people bought this versus how many people bought the other sets, 2% of people from that page went on to buy the original trilogy set.
Wow.
Most people are buying nine disc sets.
Yeah, because we're all fucking guppies.
Yeah, it's sad. So I don't know what I'm going to do yet. I'll probably get sucked into buying the original trilogy, but I certainly won't be buying anything else.
Make someone else buy it for you for Christmas. It's there coming out September.
That's a good
call. Close enough.
Yep.
Hmm.
What else is going on?
I don't know. Did we talk about something sciencey a little while ago?
Yeah, we were talking about Lagrange points and all kinds of crazy shit.
Yeah, you were talking about water shields too. How much water? I mean, isn't that the? Have you read that Greg Bear book, Hull 03?
No.
It's worth reading. It's
no,
pretty good.
But one of the other things I learned from talking to this NASA scientist, I didn't know this, that water is an incredibly good radiation shield.
Yeah, it eats neutrons, and neutrons are one of the things that fuck you up.
One way in which, if you were building an interstellar starship, water, you need very long journeys, you need a tremendous amount of water. The water tanks basically line the inner and outer hull.
Mm-hmm.
So it creates a radiation shield, which can come in handy if you need to be in close proximity to a star or what have you. And also, you know, you don't have traditional water tanks, but it's just a great way to store water and have it circulated.
Wow, but I did not know that.
But the other thing
is, is water safe after it's been exposed?
I don't know.
No, it should be. It's just neutrons.
Huh.
It's just an occasional piece of deuterium.
The first piece of science fiction cinema that shows when a ship is destroyed, that water is breaking from the hull, I would be impressed. I want to see
That happened in Battlestar, dude. Second episode.
Yeah, there was a whole issue with water tanks, right? They were low on water.
I mean like a ship where it's lined between the exterior and inner hull.
Well, that's
with water.
I mean that's Avatar. Avatar, the whole thing is that the thing that's the shield that goes in front of the ship to because you're moving a significant fraction of the speed of light, you hit a piece of three atoms of dust.
Yeah.
It has serious consequences.
Yeah.
It was a giant piece of ice.
Yeah. It's a tremendous shock absorber as well. I remember from the Fourth Protocol, from that book.
I never read that.
I learned that, and the subsequent movie they showed it as well, that when Michael Caine's character is blowing a safe in a house that he's broken into, he has a big bag of water taped around the safe. So when he blows it, the water absorbs most of the destructive power. Yeah.
Interesting. Well, water doesn't compress. That's the thing.
Water is incredibly useful for all kinds of things.
Oh, it's what they did in the score. They filled the safe up with water.
Yeah.
And that's how they blew out the safe.
Yeah.
Like just more and more pressure?
More pressure.
Hydraulics.
The other thing I learned about that's really interesting is the theory of this so-called nemesis star. Do you know about this?
Oh, the one that's
opposite
us?
It's like a companion star to the sun.
Yeah.
Which we apparently can't confirm whether or not it's there or not.
Right, but every 63 million years, its orbit comes close to us.
Yeah, and there are some people who believe that that when it swings around, that's the cause of the mass extinctions.
Hold on, is that a real thing that people actually believe, though, or is that a crazy thing? I thought that was a crazy thing.
Well, I think it's not – I don't know if it's crazy or not, but I think there are some scientists who have put forward the idea that
A brown dwarf or something like that, right?
Yeah,
there have been five
mass extinctions in Earth's history,
right? And they're all about the same,
and they're all about the same, and they're all about equidistant. And so some people theorize that it's timed up with this so-called nemesis star or death star swinging, or it's highly elliptical.
I heard about a death star in a movie once.
Yeah, well, this is a similar idea. It doesn't fire beams; it just
proximity, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just high amounts of whatever radiation it's emitting or whatever.
Interesting.
Or the other theory is that what it does is when it gets into a certain proximity with the Oort cloud. Do you know what the Oort cloud is?
The Oort cloud is a ball of icy and rocky material out beyond the orbit of Pluto.
I'm very impressed with your astronomical ability.
Dude.
Yeah. That when it passes through the Oort cloud, it can send comets in our direction.
So wait. But this is not a celestial body. It's a star. This is
it's a red dwarf or a brown dwarf, which for some reason we cannot detect or deny the existence of.
I don't know about red dwarfs. But brown dwarfs are very, very faint and don't illuminate very much. They're usually dead stars.
Right. And it's in a highly elliptical orbit around the sun and only, you know, swings around into our neighborhood every 23 million years or so.
Right. 63 million years, right?
23.
But it's actually entered our solar system.
The thing is, a star enters our solar system. Yeah, there is.
That a star?
Happen. Yeah.
But it's very small.
A brown dwarf is very small. Brown dwarf very, is the size very of Earth. Small. Okay. I mean, they're relatively small. Very small. It could penetrate the solar system, knock a whole shitload of stuff loose in the Oort cloud.
Right.
And you know, even knock planets off course because it's a very dense star as well, right? Compared to our star.
That's got
to
be the worst way to die. When our planet is knocked off course, there's no way you can fix that.
Yeah.
Bruce Willis can fix it.
No way you can realign the planet and get the right momentum to create orbit.
I was also learning about asteroids.
Everybody jumps at once.
They have a specific name. I can't remember what they're called, but it begins with a T. But a particular kind of asteroid which comes at us out of the sun and renders it almost impossible to detect. This has happened before. Like, we didn't know it was coming until after it went by.
Yeah.
And if one of those is on a direct collision course with us, again, there's no Bruce Willis scenario because you don't even get 2 weeks' notice. The first we will hear about it is when it hits us.
Right.
That's pretty scary.
China's gone.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Who's going to make my iPhone?
Arizona. Congratulations, guys.
Yay, jobs for Americans.
Right. You've been nominated. Oh, Canada. Okay, I think that's it. We've off the rails sufficiently here today. Thanks, guys.
No problem.